Good evening. Our city council has just returned from a closed session, and I will ask our city attorney if there's any reportable item.
There is no reportable action.
Thank you. Well, I'll call to order the regular session of the city council meeting and ask Mayor Pro Tem Borbo to lead us in a Pledge of Allegiance.
Please rise and join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Also move.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on the agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be allowed by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. On to our consent calendar. All items on the consent calendar are considered routine and non-controversial and can generally be passed in one motion, unless there's a member of the public or a council wishing to pull an item, and we'll consider that separately. Is there any member of the council wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, is there a member of the public wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, I will ask for a motion.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Fonzie, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And we're on to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. The first item that I want to talk to you about tonight is the Tamale Festival. I know it's a lot of people's favorite time of year. It's one of my favorite time of year. As I reported to you last month, our fifth annual Tamale Festival is being expanded to a two-day event, which will be held this coming Friday evening, and then throughout the day on Saturday. So if you come on Sunday, you're out of luck. The 2 days are Friday and Saturday. And we're very excited to have a grand opening party on Friday that includes not only the tamale vendors and bands, but a fireworks show. I've seen a lot of stuff going on social media discussing the fireworks show. I want to make it clear that this is a fireworks show that has been permitted through the fire chief. We don't have a high fire risk at this time of year. Luckily, we've had some rain and some nice green grasses and a high moisture content. This does not mean that you can light off your own fireworks at your house or firecrackers or anything like that. You will be cited just as normal. This is a permitted fireworks show. It's currently scheduled for around 8 to 10 minutes, starting at 7:30. We'll be shooting off the fireworks from the Colony Park softball fields, and you should have the best vantage and viewpoint of them from downtown near all the tamale vendors there in the Sunken Garden and along the streets, and you'll be able to see them over the houses there. We are notifying nearby residents of the fireworks show. We do know that some animals are particularly susceptible to loud noises, and that may cause problems. Hopefully, by giving everybody an advance notice for this 10-minute show, we can help prevent some frustrations. After the exciting celebration from 5 to 10 on Friday, so we'll have two bands, fireworks, a lot of tamale vendors on Friday night. On Saturday from 11 to 5 p.m., we're going to have even more tamale vendors and lots of other wonderful vendors, music, entertainment. Entertainment on Saturday will include a wide variety of music with mariachi Bossas Tapatias. That's it. And then Mariachi Mexicanissimo, Los Gatos Locos Band, and the Steppin' Out Band, plus Ranchero artist Manuel Enrique, the famous dancing horses, the folkloric dancers, bounce houses, zorb balls, bungee jumps, face painting, balloon animals, and lots of fun and entertainment for all ages, in addition to lots and lots of amazing tamales. I don't know about you, but I go through and I try little pieces of a whole bunch with a group, and then we decide which ones we really like and buy them frozen from the vendors, and you can do them all year long. So it's a fantastic opportunity. We will have a judge's favorite tamale contest, a tamale eating contest, and a chihuahua and pet costume contest. So please make sure, if you haven't been out before, please come on out to the Tamale Festival. If you have come out before, I know you're coming back because it's a wonderful event and you have a little bit longer. I just wanted, because everybody was so busy with the holidays, I just wanted to hit a few of our new businesses and just remind people that are open. So Jamba, not Jamba Juice, Jamba, their new tag, and Auntie Anne Pretzels at the corner of Highway 41 and 101 is open. I have to say that I have been to both, and both are really good, and highly encourage everybody to go. They have a great variety of delicious soft pretzels, obviously fruit smoothies, other great healthy and tasty options. They have a lot more food, both Jamba and Auntie Anne's. It's not just pretzels and smoothies. They have a lot to offer, great lunch offerings. Stop by, welcome them to Atascadero. It's well worth the stop. We also have Wild Fields Brew House in the Creekside Building at Colony Square. This is going to be a new favorite of mine also. It's a new local pub with a great menu, a terrific selection of craft brews. Simply Genuine is really good, by the way. And is a place the whole family can enjoy. They have many bowling lanes. We took the city manager's department. We went there for lunch last week and had an amazing lunch, had the carrot dog that the mayor had talked about. That's pretty darn good. That's pretty amazing, along with linguica and Polish, everything that you can imagine. The only bummer was that Lara and her team beat us at mini bowling. So we'll have to do a rematch sometime soon. So anyway, there's something for everyone in the whole family. They have toys for little kids. As I said, they probably have 15 to 20 different craft brews. Great place, really good food. And then Central Coast Distillery, located at 5804 Traffic Way. This opened fairly quietly, and I know I did mention it, but just worth another mention. They're a unique craft distillery. They handcraft single-batch spirits and distill and create a range of spirits that are a complement to a healthy lifestyle. And they're open Thursday through Saturday evenings. Check them out. Another place, great distilled spirit. They have a few cocktails. That's the fire chief telling me the fire is out. And just a nice place to hang out with Eric and his wife, and just a great atmosphere. So if you haven't checked out those and some of our new other businesses, please do. Make sure we have some fantastic places here in Atascadero. Let's make sure we patronize them. Speaking of fantastic businesses here in Atascadero, Stan and Mary Sherwin of K. John's Jewelers, they've been the owners of K. John Jewelers for 40 years, and we want to make sure that we publicly recognize them for being here in town, all that they've contributed to town. They have retired. They've always been very strong supporters of our community, and throughout the years have donated generously to our various youth sports and other youth organizations. I'm sure that most, if not all of us, have visited their store at some point over the years, and they've been a fixture here in town. So we are sorry to see Stan and Mary retire. But we are very happy to announce the good news that K. John is now under new ownership. And the new owners, Lindsay and Greg Chatham, who are keeping the K. John's branding, are reopening the store this Thursday, January 16th. So we will still have a K. John's here in town. Lindsay and Greg are going to be keeping the the wonderful Cajon's legacy going, and so we're still so happy to have that here in Atascadero. The last item I have for you tonight is I've asked Chief Haley to give us a brief update on the smoking ordinance. When we adopted the smoking ordinance, you asked us to come back after a period of a few months and see how things were going. So with that, I will turn it over to Chief Haley.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to come back to council and report on how things have been going since the passage of the smoking ordinance. It has been a couple of months now. We certainly were concerned about a couple of different areas where we were having problems along the corridor on Atascadero Avenue and behind Centennial Plaza and some other areas. Happy to report that things seem to be going well. I've only been able to locate one call for service in the last several months in the area of Atascadero Avenue, so the effect of passing the ordinance has effectively ended the behaviors, by and large, to our knowledge. At least people are not reporting them if they're continuing, and that's a dramatic improvement, and so we're grateful for that. There have been a total of six citations issued since passage, and I'm a little embarrassed to say that most of those, I think, are mine. As I leave City Hall, often I encounter individuals over at Centennial Plaza, and for a couple of months we were having a problem with some juveniles that were engaged in behaviors that were unsavory, to say the least, and disruptive to businesses in the area. And so we did take enforcement action in a couple of cases with some of those juveniles who were in possession of tobacco products and seemed to have been effective in clearing out the problems and remedying the situation for our business owners in the area. And so, again, even though we did have to take some enforcement action, I think the tool that was provided by council has proven quite valuable in eliminating what had been a pretty serious ongoing concern for some of our local businesses and then people walking to and from the downtown plaza area. And so other than that, nothing really to report. It's an effective tool, and we've had good success with it, and I think it was wise to implement, and so we appreciate council's assistance and partnership with the police department on that. I'm happy to answer any questions about it if you have any.
Do we have any questions of the chief or the city manager? Oh, no, I think we're good. Thank you. And I do want to say about Lindsay and Greg, Lindsay used to work at Cajon, so she does have that past here in Atascadero, so it's nice to have that connection. And she's an award-winning jewelry designer at that, so kind of exciting. Oh, and Eric's Craft Cocktails, he's an artist. This guy is an artist, makes some pretty cool things. We have so much fun stuff going on down here in Atascadero, so thank you for that report. We are on to community forum, and this is the part of our meeting where any member of the public is welcome to come forward and speak to the council on any item that is not on the agenda tonight, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and public comment will be limited to a total of 30 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and there is a three-minute warning sign up there to let you know. And please know that anything that is brought up this evening cannot be a subject of discussion. We will triage where we can, but we cannot talk about items that are not previously agendized. So with that, welcome to our first speaker.
Well, good evening, Mayor, Council, members of the public and staff. My name is Frances Romero. I'm a land use consultant, and I'm here tonight representing Scott Newton. We want to say thank you for delaying action tonight on the revision to the public use zone parcels so that the impacted landowners could receive proper notice. We really appreciate that. Certainly, you know Mr. Newton by now. He's a bit frustrated, and he feels like there's been a lot of focus on his two parcels and that he's even been a little singled out in that proposed change. His consultant team has over 125 years of experience, and none of us have really seen this type of focus on a parcel before. There's no secret, Mr. Newton would like to do storage on his site, but he's also trying to discuss permitted uses with your staff, and so far does not seem to have found one that's acceptable, so we're a little concerned about that. And he's also been told that he can't rezone his parcel to a more agreeable use because of the pending general plan update. So I'm certain that you're all smart people. You can see the dilemma that he has at this point. He has something he wants to do that he can't do. He's proposed other things that he could do, but he's been discouraged from doing those. And he can't rezone to do something that would apparently be better for everybody. All he really wants to know is what is the right use. And so far, we've not been able to get any guidance on that. Additionally, we've been made aware that all previous attempts for projects on this site have also been unacceptable. So I'm sure you can see the frustration. He has heard statements about partner with other developers that know how to get projects done in the city or sell your property. And at this point, selling it's going to be a little difficult given the limitations to do really anything on it based on the current zoning. We'd like to request that rather than make a revision now to the zone district, that you you table this to the general plan update so that it could be done along with that. Mr. Newton's parcels might not even be P-zoned or public use zoned after your general plan update. We don't really see any imminent threat with anything that he could do on the site since he has to come to you for approval anyway. In the meantime, Mr. Newton has been keeping communication open with staff and the city. We really hope that he can deliver a project that will be a win for everybody and make everybody happy. So we're just asking you to hit the pause button on making any changes to the P-zone until the general plan update is done and a full vetting can be done in public with proper notices. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Scott Newton. I'd like to address the proposed changes to the zoning of my property. There are approximately 35 parcels in the city of Atascadero that are marked public, and of those, only 9 are privately owned by individuals rather than government or nonprofits like churches. As this council knows, I own 2 of those parcels, and I have been asking to build the Dove Creek self-storage on them. Knowing that I own 2 of the 9 privately owned parcels, city staff did not notify me about the intent to modify the zoning of my land, specifically to delete self-storage. I found out about this when someone who was watching the December 10th City Council meeting for a different reason called me and told me about it. It seems unlikely that the government or church would ask to construct a self-storage business on their land. So to me, it appears that the city is clearly targeting me and my land in making these changes. As your staff knows, I have completely redesigned our project. These design changes respond to every comment made by this council in September. But in my eyes, you're trying to prevent my project from moving forward by simply taking self-storage out of the public zoning classification. This zoning change doesn't affect anyone else, just me. It appears that what you're doing to modify the public zoning category for the sole reason of killing my project. In an effort to find an appropriate use for my property, I've explored permitted uses as shown in the city's zoning and planning ordinances. Those uses have also been discouraged or rejected by your staff. Staff has also indicated that rezoning my property is not an option, which leaves me with 2 parcels that I cannot use. For the record, I object to the modification of the zoning change and removal of self-storage as a conditionally allowed use within the public zoning. And I object to the fact that no one from the city even contacted me regarding this change. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. If there's anyone wishing to speak, we have a little bit of a different setup this evening. As you can tell, WineSpeak is in here, so this is not normal if you normally come. If you're thinking of speaking, you might want to try to make your way in that area so we can facilitate a smooth transition between public members. Thank you.
Good evening, Council, Mayor, staff. I'd like to reiterate a few things that our city manager said about our businesses in Atascadero. We have the First Fridays downtown, which I think is a great success. My wife and I frequent a lot of those. And what's happened is she goes back, if she doesn't shop that night, she goes back, and I think there's a lot of our residents doing that now in the downtown, seeing the businesses that are actually alive and vibrant. We were out of town a couple weeks ago for a few days because she's looking for a dress for Dancing with Our Stars. And we hit a lot of dress shops. Let me tell you, I was bored. Nonetheless, she went to one in the Adobe Plaza the other day. Didn't even know there was one there. So we are making headway, as we like to say, the city is open for business, and I think we do have some fantastic businesses in this town, and we are shopping more and more in this town for business. So I think we are in a step in the right direction, and I know you mentioned a lot of the newer businesses in town. You know, the restaurants are improving greatly. Don Q's is fantastic. So we're making some strides in this town for small business especially, and I hope we can continue doing that. And, of course, K. John staying open is huge for this town. Losing Kmart is good and bad. Of course, it's the only general merchandise store left in town, but I hear we might be getting one. And if that's the case, that's even better. And that shopping center being cleaned up with a facelift. So I think we're making headway. When we talk about drive-thrus, because this is still on my agenda here, as much as I don't like a lot of our drive-thrus, it is what happens, and people get off the freeway, and they eat at our drive-thrus, and they go through. But I think more and more of them see businesses that are open, and they're apt to shop at our businesses as well. So I think as much as I don't like some of the new ones that are opening, because they're close to my house and the temptation's there rather than going home and eating, it does help business in this town the way our 13 miles of El Camino Real is going. On one other note, this is to the chief because he would not know about this, but we had some break-ins at my place and at Solarponics and a couple others, and due to fast-acting by the police department, they did apprehend them. The good news is, or the bad news is based on the California law, but at least we have him in custody. He has been for a while. He took a plea deal, and he's in jail at least for the next 9 months, so it's good for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at community forum? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close that and bring that back to Scott. I don't think that was me. Scared me, but I don't think that was me. Okay. That's quite the sound. All right. Yes, regarding the P-Zone, comments are certainly taken on that. My conversation with the city manager is noticing was done legally, properly, the way that it needed to be. So we understand that that was done appropriately. And I know that staff has been working with you, and you know maybe there just aren't things that are working between the two right now, but encourage that conversation to remain open. And Jeff, yes, First Fridays downtown are fantastic. My husband and I were down there. We saw Susan down there, and it's nice to see that increased energy. And the drive-through temptations, gotta... You can handle that, I know. And good job to PD. Thank you for that fast action and helping our businesses to the extent of law that we can. We appreciate that. And now, we are on to public hearings, and we have our first public hearing, which is appeal of the Planning Commission decision of the Human Being Coffee. And I will start with ex parte communications, and I will go from my left to my right.
I have spoken with the applicant. I sit on the design review committee. This project was submitted to us for review, and then I've also received an email from the applicant.
I met with the applicant's representative on the site today and spoke to two of the planning commissioners who were involved in the decision and listened to the tape of the planning commission meeting.
Okay. I've also met with the applicant's representative on site and had previous communications with her. I've also spoken with a nearby neighbor and have reviewed the planning commission items as well.
I sit on the design review committee and attended the meeting when this was heard. I also live within 500 feet of this project, so I need to recuse myself from it and will be stepping down at this time. I exchanged an email and did a site visit with the applicant's representative. I also did site visits at comparator sites, Walgreens, Starbucks on Santa Rosa, and Brewitt on 41, and collected information of those on distances between speakers or points of noise and the walls of or fences of neighboring residential properties.
And with that, turn over to our Community Development Director, Mr. Densmore.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Mayor and Council. First of all, I'd just like to give you some background on this project. We did take this to the Design Review Committee last year and then on to the Planning Commission December 3rd, where we did have some discussion on the topic of the appeal, and that was the noise discussion, and they did decide to not take action on that particular item at that time. But I'll get into some further details about that. We did receive the appeal December 16th. And it's really a one-issue appeal based on, I'll call it residential or neighborhood compatibility, based on exterior noise for that proposed drive-through use, and particularly regarding an outdoor speaker for ordering for that drive-through coffee shop that's been proposed. Just a little bit of background on the project. I'm going to give you some statistics for those that aren't too familiar with it. This is along El Camino Real, just north of Curbrill. That's in our general commercial zone for our general plan. The actual zoning is called commercial professional. There's a house on one of the properties, and there's an old storage building, a block building on the other. There's actually two lots here that would need to be consolidated together to serve this project and see this development. But they are proposing to remove the house structure, build a drive-through only coffee kiosk, so not a sit-down restaurant, not a walk-up thing, but just a drive-through, and then redo the driveway entrances and surfaces and make that meet accessible codes and building codes. It's just a 600-square-foot little building. The existing building in the back would remain on the site. They plan to use that for wholesale and distribution. Again, there would be an entire improvement plan for the whole site. Just to give you a little layout of how this area looks, and the colors on this map indicate different zoning districts. Off to the far left, you've got Highway 101. That red area is a commercial retail district. The purple is a professional office district, which also allows for retail. And then you see those orange and yellow colors. Those are residential districts. So you can see that that commercial district's a pretty thin sliver along the east side of El Camino Real, up and down there. So we oftentimes have to look at this interface between commercial land uses and residential uses. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw the coffee shop site plan on there. You see that? That's what's been approved by the Planning Commission. That's the topic of appeal on that particular site. You can see how that sits on that property in between El Camino Real and those residential properties at the rear. And that kind of gives you some perspective of where this location is that we're speaking about tonight. Here's how the site looks today. It definitely is in need of some new things going on. It's a bit rough, so it's an old house there. It's been sitting vacant for a little bit, and it's a bit of a rough driveway. So the good thing is we're really excited about this new little coffee shop coming in here to reinvigorate this location. Really looking forward to another new business at this particular spot. There's that building that they proposed to rehabilitate and use for a warehousing and distribution for their coffee in the back. That's kind of a neat-looking building, actually, in a certain way, with its sliding barn doors and kind of old industrial style. I could see that becoming a neat part of that particular site. Here's a look at the site plan that was evaluated by the Design Review Committee, approved by the Planning Commission. Essentially, you've got an entry area, an exit, and then a circulation around this drive-through kiosk. That little red circle up the front, that's kind of the point of contention of discussion tonight, the new speaker that you would order from as you drive through that. And just to note, it's about 108 feet from the nearest residential property line. And again, that block building would remain. There is a new trash enclosure that would be proposed. And then there's landscaping across the entire site. Here's a look at that landscape plan. There's sort of a backyard area back there now that abuts the residential property. And that's where, you know, that resident back there, we did hear from him at the Planning Commission meeting. He did come in and voice a concern about the potential noise from this speaker, and that's what's prompted the appeal in this particular scenario. But looking at that, we did also put conditions on this project to make sure that back area gets landscaped, is well maintained, doesn't become an area that's forgotten or, you know, attractive nuisance to other issues. So we do have some conditions that do pertain to that. So very important component of really some urban renewal on this particular site. Here's what a human being coffee shop typically looks like. This is pretty similar to the one that would be installed here in Atascadero. Pretty simple. I visited these in the Northwest. Fantastic coffee, actually. And here's what their signs look like. Why I'm showing you this, because on the top right of that image, you see what this speaker is, this ordering speaker, the typical ordering speaker you see at any of these drive-through restaurants. And that's, you know, the main topic of tonight. What I'd like to do is give you a little background on noise and what we have in our policies. Our municipal code actually regulates noise for all commercial businesses, construction projects, and what it does, it sets up two parameters. One's a daytime parameter and one's a nighttime parameter. And those hours are between 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. is called the daytime. And from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. is called the nighttime. And we have different thresholds of what we are supposed to tolerate for a commercial land use in terms of its potential impact to a residential land use or another sensitive land use. And there's decibel numbers they set to that. And we measure those decibel numbers over an average period of time over an hour, and because there's spikes and there's valleys, and we like to see what that average is. So what we expect for a maximum exposure for a commercial land use is 45 decibels at night after 9 p.m. and before 7 a.m. Now, in this particular case, they have looked at their outside speaker. They've looked at the, you know, the operational items, and the commission actually did put a condition on there that requires this, what they call automatic volume control. And it's purported that that would bring the decibel level of that speaker when you're standing, let's say you're standing 8 feet away from it, down to about 42 decibels. What does that mean? Well, it means that the sound level most likely most of the time will be lower than the sound volume of the adjacent road at El Camino Real. Now, obviously, there's going to be deviations from that. Sometimes you've got a really quiet road at 5 o'clock in the morning and things could be different. What they've also sent us recently is some noise evaluations, their observations at night, what could occur. Now, these are based on what we assume average traffic to be through the El Camino Real corridor. They're not based on someone going to the site and actually measuring the noise, but based on, you know, based on a typical traffic scenario at night, what are the noise levels? The colors you see on there, what they're trying to express is different noise level. That deepest purple along the road is the highest noise level, 65, 70 decibels. And as you head into the reds and the yellows and oranges, it gets quieter and quieter and quieter. Where that star is on that property is the approximate location of that speaker, which is in roughly, I think it was shown to be about a 45 decibel noise range. And that's the ambient noise from the traffic produced at night. So I think what the applicant is trying to express here is that that external speaker is probably going to be quieter than the typical average noise level at night. And so I think that's their argument for saying, do we need to regulate our hours of operation? I think that's what you'll hear from the applicant tonight. But again, what I'll remind the council of, just like we did at the Planning Commission, is you do have discretion. It says a conditional use permit, and that's exactly the items we look at. We look at how can we make a commercial project more compatible with its existing surroundings, and we have to make a set of findings in order to do that. And in some cases, we need to adopt special conditions to take care of those things. This is that set of findings. These are the six findings that are the basic conditional use permit findings. And most, you know, the most pertinent one here is use will not be detrimental to the health, safety, or welfare of the public. if we feel like we need to issue additional conditions for this business to protect the public from noise levels that we feel may be above and beyond what our noise policies are or above and beyond what's needed to protect public health, safety, welfare, peacefulness, basically, then we need to do that. In some scenarios, what we do on projects, and we've done this with things like Walgreens because they've got a drive-through, we say, you know, we're not going to restrict your hours specifically, but we're going to put a performance condition on your project. We're going to say, all right, you need to comply with the city standards, but we're also going to monitor your business over time, and if we receive complaints, we're going to have to come back in and potentially modify your conditions, modify your hours, build a sound wall, do things that can reduce your project impacts. We sort of leave that open and sort of a wait and see, let's see how the project's going to operate, because you never really know until it's done. It may be an issue, it may not be an issue at all. So that's one thing that the council considered tonight. We could do things such as restrict the hours of the speaker. We could look at performance conditions and a wait and see, or at the council's pleasure, look at other particular options. The alternatives tonight that we're looking at, we can continue this if we need more information. We can turn around, reverse the Planning Commission's decision, and continue this to a date specific and direct us to come back with a resolution that details your reason for reversal. That would be denial of the project. Or we could amend the project conditions, as I was mentioning. But our recommendation really tonight is granting the appeal, affirming in part the Planning Commission's action, which would approve their use permit, let them move forward, but with a revised condition that speaks to those hours of operation for that external speaker. Or we could just deny the appeal with the other resolution we have there and approve it just as it is. Or alternatively, like I said, we can look at alternative conditions that address those particular findings that we have. Now, at this point, I'd like to go ahead and open it up for discussion, and I'd be happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. We will start with questions of staff. I'll look to the lights. Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Dunsmore, and I know we're here to mostly talk about noise, but I wanted to make sure we clarify on the record something else, and that is you and I exchanged emails after the appeal was announced. I, you know, read the Planning Commission report, and condition number 17 states that traffic impact fees shall be provided for this project based on the city's alternative trip calculation method, and we recently, the council recently took an action to that would adopt that policy, which would substantially raise fees for drive-through operations. And my question to you was, it doesn't seem like that would apply here as a project already under consideration. And you indicated back to me in email that, no, it would not. But I want to make sure that on the record we get that condition number 17 is amended to state something else. Can you respond to that?
Thank you for bringing that up. When we put this condition on here, it was during that particular discussion, but the reality is this application did come in prior to the council taking action and giving sort of a policy recommendation on how we would implement that alternative trip calculation fee. So in this particular scenario, it's the council's pleasure to remove that condition. We can do that, and that would be commensurate with how we've treated other drive-through projects. But a new project that comes in after the date the council did essentially adopt that policy, we would be looking at that particular condition.
Right, but to be clear then, in this case, because it did come in, it would be unfair to apply it to
yes.
this project. Therefore, should we, to be clear, or maybe this is more of a city clerk question, as part of whatever resolution, well, assuming we adopt some sort of an approving resolution here, that we delete condition 17 or change it to wording that you think is appropriate to reflect the previous fee schedule?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Okay. And then, actually, I think most of my other questions probably are more suitable for the applicant, and particularly if the applicant's sound consultant is here. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Yes, I have, and pardon my sort of croaky voice tonight, I have a number of questions related to other projects that we might use as guidance for precedent in this situation. Let me start with the Brewitt coffee shop. My understanding is that they does not have an outdoor speaker.
That's correct.
Okay. Is there any condition in its conditional use permit? Because it would have had a conditional use permit as a drive-through, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there any condition in its permit on their installing an outdoor speaker later?
No.
Okay. Or on the noise or specification. There's nothing in there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so they could add an outdoor speaker later, and it would not be in violation of that.
If they were to add an outdoor speaker, they would have to come to our department to ask to install that, and we'd have to determine whether that is something that is consistent with their approval, or if it's not, we'd have to go back through a review process to determine, you know, what level of review. Probably go back to Planning Commission because it's a significant change
mm-hmm. okay.
on that project.
Okay. Other recent drive-throughs, the Taco Bell that's been approved for the Del Rio area, my understanding is that that's will have an outdoor speaker. It will face 101. It has no restrictions on its hours of operation, but it doesn't face any residences.
That is correct. And in fact, its orientation and location doesn't have, other than a nearby hotel that's about 400 feet away, there's not any residential near it. Plus the freeway noise from 101, its proximity to that freeway noise, when you think about traffic, it's about 65 to 75 decibels.
Yeah.
It's going to drown out anything. And so its proximity, we look at those things and say it doesn't make sense to put on conditions in that mm-hmm. area. It's not adjacent to a sensitive receptor.
Okay. And the new Starbucks at Santa Rosa, they're in the Santa, near the Holiday Inn up there near Santa Rosa. Are there any restrictions on its hours of operation or its hours of operation on amplified sound?
No. And that one is a little bit interesting. It's a little bit different because that center there with the Jack in the Box and the Starbucks and what was Marston's 101 and the hotel and the residential behind it were all planned at one time as one particular project. Now, we didn't know what restaurant types would come in there. It could have been a fuel station. It could have been a restaurant. It could have been a drive-through or a non-drive-through. But it is important to note that it was one planned center, and they did put up a big block sound wall in between those land uses mm-hmm. to ensure that there was better land use compatibility. So in that particular scenario, no, there was not conditions put on for hours of operation or for the sound or the loudspeaker. But it's a different scenario, whereas what we're looking at tonight, you're talking about a residential zone that's been in existence since the 1920s, and the commercial zone has grown up around it. And you've got fences that are made of wood that separate that area from the commercial zone. So it's a different sort of level of sensitivity, whereas the use permit process is useful in evaluating those issues.
Okay. I think my remaining questions are for the applicant.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, followed by Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. Mr. Dunsmore, I think I'd ask you this question, but I didn't expect you to know it off the top of your head, but I think of the existing Taco Bell as being more analogous to this scenario here where it has a drive-through, it has a speaker, and it has residential stuff in the back. Have you been able to determine if there have been substantial noise complaints relative to the operation of the Taco Bell?
People have told me that they have had complaints on that. I've heard there's complaints. I haven't seen any myself. It's interesting. I looked at the history of that Taco Bell recently. It was built in 78, actually, prior to city incorporation. It started out as one of those cool Taco Bells that didn't have a drive-through. It was a neat traditional place with a big patio. And then somewhere in the 90s, they converted to a drive-through, and they got a use permit to do that. And there was a bunch of conditions on that, but nothing about noise and compatibility. And then later on, I think in the 2000s, they modified it a bit further. But Yeah, they are abutting a multifamily residential zone, and I think there have been complaints, but from what I've heard, those complaints have been about people in the queuing with loud stereos and different things happening rather than the actual speaker itself, but I could be wrong.
Okay, and well, and speaking of that, I mean, it's the noise from the vehicles, frankly, to me, that are probably more concerning than speakers, but what about the... along the lines of what Councilmember Funk asked, the Walgreens, there's no hours of limitation on them. And I know there are Walgreens with 24-hour pharmacies. And I was very surprised to learn that we don't have hours of limitation on some of these pre-existing drive-thrus. Is that to say, though, then that a Walgreens could, or the existing Starbucks, could go to 24-hour operation if they decided to for business reasons?
Yes, they could.
Okay. And Walgreens sort of backs up to a residential area. Have we had any complaints regarding noise from there?
I haven't seen any history of complaints. I do know that they did require Walgreens to construct a solid masonry wall 8 feet tall because there was concerns when the project was reviewed that there would be a compatibility issue. But I think that the wall really helped alleviate those issues. They also put conditions, kind of a performance condition on that one to say, hey, if there's issues, we may have to reevaluate this, in so many words.
And anywhere else in town, I mean, In-N-Out Burger, any places, or Taco Bell late at night? I don't know how late they operate, but have we had any other areas where there's been complaints
there
because of a
drive-thru
operation?
There hasn't been this sort of scenario where you've got it a drive-thru backing up to essentially older single-family residential. It's an unusual situation in this particular case.
All right. And I'm very interested in the concept of a delayed, I'll call it a delayed condition, but it sounds like you said a performance condition wherein perhaps a year from now you look at a prod, you know, the, because we can all speculate in some degree about, you know, what may or may not occur with a given project, and we, you know, we can turn out to be wrong. Can you tell me a little more about the idea of a performance condition, i.e. going back later, and i.e. a year later and saying, hey, this is not working out. Something else needs to be done. Is that what you're referring to?
Absolutely, yes. And it's very common with a conditional use permit to put a performance condition on there, whether it's regarding lighting or noise or maintenance of the property, maintenance of the landscape. We commonly add those just so that down the line we have something to look back at to say, hey, we, you know, made you aware that this is a concern of ours. Now we need to revisit this, perhaps adjust your conditions so that we can maintain those findings that we made for your use permit.
And in our city, have we included any of those conditions and then had to exercise them anywhere that you can think of?
Not in my term in the last few years, we have not. I know I have done that in other cities, and I'm sure that our staff has done that in history here, but I can't tell you definitively any particular cases I can think of at the moment.
All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Newsom.
What is the current wall height or wall composite for the residential area behind this location?
I was actually back there today just to double check and see how things are looking back there. It's a wooden fence that's atop. It looks like about a 6-foot wooden fence that's atop a short retaining wall that may be on one side. The retaining wall is about 1 or 2 feet. On the other side, it may be 2 or 3 feet. So there's varying heights of wood fence atop a short concrete retaining wall.
I looked through some of our notes of existing sound walls, and you previously spoke to the Walgreens. What do you recommend for noise height-wise, putting in a sound wall, or does that just create more of a acoustics for the sounds to dissipate and disperse into the neighborhood?
When built properly and built with the right direction for the sound, sound walls can be a really good mitigation. They're quite effective and they're built with the right materials, and you've got landscape in front of them that helps absorb additional sound and helps do the aesthetic. But they're expensive, you know, also could become the result of tagging and things like that. So we've got to think of all the avenues. I guess we have to also draw the conclusion, do we have a true nexus? Do we have a real significant noise that really warrants that, or are there other things that can be done more cost-effectively? So it's certainly a good thing to keep on the list of potentials. For example, you know, if we had a car wash here with a dryer, that would probably be a really good idea. And building that sound wall so it directs the sound out to El Camino Real, where we already have a significant sound source, and making sure that we're not directing the sound across the street to where there might be something else that could be a receptor of that sound. So in this particular scenario, I don't know that we've given significant consideration to a wall. I don't think that's been part of the discussion, but certainly not out of the question.
The applicant sent a letter to all of us dated January 8th discussing the existing businesses in that area that, in the case of the Human Being Project, Section 9-14.05B of the ordinance allows a higher level because the ambient noise level at the property boundary of the receiving site pre-project exceeds the level permitted by the ordinance at two of the three locations during daytime hours and at one of the three locations during nighttime hours. They seem to be indicating that there is already other established businesses that are above these standards. Is that correct?
It sounds like what the analysis says is that the road noise itself is above those standards. I don't know about other businesses in the area, but essentially the road noise is the source. The traffic on El Camino Real is already above that sound. I think that's what they're trying to say.
So then we add a speaker on it. Does that increase it, or does it just get muffled by the sound of traffic?
A little bit of both. So sometimes when, let's say at 5 o'clock in the morning, and there's nobody driving by for a one-minute span, and the speaker comes on, you might hear it, right? It might be that piercing sound at night. Sound, when they measure sound, they average it out over an hour when they do measurement. So it comes out with this average. And there might be a big sound here of a big truck going by, then it's quiet. And then a Harley will come by, and it goes way up here, and it's quiet. And then they average that out to come up with this number, like 45, 55, 65. The speaker may be 45, and it may be one of those spikes. You know, so if it comes in combination with the cars going by as the traffic light comes on, it's probably muffled. But it may go on when there's no cars going by and it's not muffled. So it's really hard to pinpoint sound. It's really a complex thing. A whole different thing can be, too, when the wind is up, when and the air pressure is different, or if it's raining. So many different environmental factors can change how sound travels and how it might impact a neighborhood. So it's really difficult to pinpoint, hey, it's going to be this level, and the traffic's going to muffle it, and you're never going to hear it. It's really tough to say that. And I'm being extra cautious when I provide this conversation, because it's a science. But it looks like, you know, in the audience tonight, we do have one of those scientists here. They could probably provide some pretty good testimony on that kind of an art of noise measurement.
The final question I have is more along the lines of putting in noise standards. How do we enforce our noise standards?
Through our typical code enforcement process. So we get a complaint, we'll go out, investigate, verify if there's an actual violation of the noise ordinance, and we'll follow up with notification to that particular noise source.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes, you mentioned in your comments earlier that this situation is relatively rare, but as I drive up and down El Camino Real, you know, we end on 41. It seems that we have quite a number of properties that are commercial properties on El Camino Real across on not on the freeway side, but the roughly east side of the road that are backed on the backside by residential properties, whether they're single family or multifamily of one kind or another. Is that a reasonable assessment?
Absolutely. And when I mentioned rare, I was referring to a drive-through restaurant with a driveway with a use permit review where we're looking at that situation. Mm. We have a lot of commercial properties that have the potential to have noise conflicts that are shallow, that back up to single and multifamily properties all over the city, Morro Road and El Camino, both
right.
Lengths. So okay. That scenario is not rare.
Can you think of any business in town that's had a restriction placed by the council or within the conditional use permit process on its hours of operation or the hours of operation of amplified sound out of considerations for noise.
I seem to recall we did that. Did we do that on the quickie car wash? I'd have to take a look. You know, I'm sure there's some things, but I can't think of that right now.
Okay. Last, you mentioned that in the Walgreens conditional use permit, that was one of the sites that I checked today. That included a performance standard? Could you give sample language for how that condition might read of a performance standard?
Yes. In fact, I've got some of that prepared. Let's take a look. Let's see. I think I've got a slide up here. So here's an example in this particular scenario, and it's similar to what we've done on Walgreens or other ones.
That's similar to the Walgreens one.
Now, Walgreens mitigation was written primarily for construction hours and for other deliveries and things like that. It didn't actually speak to the drive-through, but it spoke to other portions of the business that are similar nature that have noise. So you can still compare the two.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I think for the first time, all of my colleagues have exhausted my questions. Good job, folks. And particularly the performance standard, I found that very, very interesting. So I think the only thing I want to clarify my understanding, and I think this is from speaking with you and from the applicant, is that there has been no actual study of the sound at that part of El Camino from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m.
I'd like to verify that with the applicant team, but that's my understanding. In my review of their noise analysis, it's based on assumptions on traffic and typical traffic levels and typical traffic noise at that site.
Because I think when I looked at the 19-page report we had, there were different areas in El Camino ranging from like 2009 to 2016. So, valid numbers, but it wasn't something at that site. And I know we're not necessarily asking for that, but just knowing what information we have, do we want that, do we not? But I want to know what we're looking at for sure, just to confirm that.
Yes.
Okay. So why don't we go ahead and do this? I'm going to open up public comment, and we're going to start, though, with the applicant. And normally speakers get about 3 minutes, but because you are the applicant, let's maybe in the 7 to 8 minute range, but go ahead and come on up. And we will then also, probably have some questions for you. Or actually, I'm wondering if it might be good for us to kind of give her the questions to list, and then she can kind of go through that, and we can streamline this a bit. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, why don't you
One of my key questions was just if the sound study person is here, are they here with you this evening, or...
Good evening, Pamela Giardini, and I am the agent for the applicant. And yes, Dr. David Lord is here tonight, and he is our noise study consultant.
Gotcha. Okay, well, because my question ultimately for him would be that I understand, as the mayor alluded to, that part of this is you're modeling traffic flows. You didn't actually, stand out there at 5 in the morning and conduct a sound study. But my other question was, because I'm not very good at technology, I guess. I wanted to understand, when you try to model for this layout, I assume there's certain programs you can use that would allow you to, pretend that the existing structure that you're tearing down is not there, and that you can model the precise height and length and even perhaps materials of the proposed structure, so that this isn't just shot in the dark of what the sound is like on an empty lot, but it's actually... A valid computer model of the proposed, with the proposed structure in mind. Technical question.
I'm going to let Dr. Lord come up and speak to you. I do have a PowerPoint presentation prepared, but it sounds like...
I just wanted to see if there were any questions, just short questions that we have that we can give to you that you'll incorporate into your PowerPoint if it makes sense to do. If not...
Yeah, I think yeah, it doesn't. Talk.
Okay. I was hoping we could streamline things, but apparently not. Ms. Giardini, please go ahead.
Thank you. I do have a PowerPoint presentation, a very quick one, because I know most of your questions will go to Dr. Lloyd. And there we go. Okay, so basically we saw it as two issues to address the appeal, being the hours of operation and then the speaker at the menu board. I should first introduce that also here is the applicant, Pat and Vicki Mitchell, as Moss Ventures LLC. Our architect, Larry Gabriel, and Dr. Lord is here too. Okay. To address the hours of operation, our project description asked for hours of operation for 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. The Planning Commission approved 24/7 hours of operation. We don't want that. We really do want just 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., and those were in our project description. And then you're asking, why do we want to open up at 5 a.m.? Well, to be competitive. Our main competitor is Starbucks. Everybody knows that. They open up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock a.m., depending on where they're located in the city. And the main competitor, it has no restriction on their hours. I pulled the use permit for the Starbucks across the freeway on the west side, and it is able to be open 24 hours, 7 days a week. And when I pulled the use permit, and Kelly Gleason can verify that, that was not the actual project that was to go there. It was to be a gas station. And then when the development plan was put in, actually the Starbucks came in later on and it was analyzed for the drive-through at that time. So when the whole residential commercial development went through, it was actually a gas station, not a Starbucks there at that time. The Starbucks came in later. They were not required to do a noise study and they have 24/7 hours of operation. The other reason why we would like to be open from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. is to remain a viable business. You get a good portion of your business from 5 a.m. in the morning to about 8:30 between commuters, between local business people, employees, and between contractors who are out at that time. And that if you go to take an order, because people have said to me, why can't we put somebody out there with an iPad? Well, then you've got an increase of your employees from 2 to 3. So therefore, it's a very small business. We're trying to make it viable. You're adding another cost of having another employee there for, 2.5 hours? Who's going to want to get up at 4:30 or 4 in the morning to get there at 5 and then be done with work by, 7:30, 8 o'clock? And so that just doesn't make good business sense. Something I do want to mention at this point is that if you have cars on site, that your ordinance, the incidental commercial parking lot noise generated by customers, are exempted under your municipal code. So if the neighbors complain that a huge diesel truck drove up, anywhere in the city, that noise that truck generates is actually exempted by your own ordinance. The second item that is to talk about tonight is the speaker at the menu board, and it does have, and we have a condition of approval put on there that it have an automatic volume control, and this registers the ambient noise level, and it's a dynamic system where it continuously adjusts to 15 decibels above the ambient noise level. And so what that does is it will be at or below ambient noise level just 10 meters away from the speaker. It will be below ambient noise level at the property boundaries, and it will not be audible at the 3 locations that are adjacent to the project site. We do not see this as a neighborhood issue. We see it as an issue to the 3 adjacent property owners, and that the acoustical report determined that there's no increase in no noise level at all 3 property owners. And so you have to the north, I've spoke to Vernon. In fact, he came out when I had Councilman Susan Funk there today. He has no objections to the project. He just asked that construction not start early, so your ordinance allows it to start at 7 a.m. The neighbor to the south is here to speak tonight, and the neighbor to the east, Mr. Alfonsi's letters. We have addressed his concerns. One of his concerns was the retaining wall, and we did agree to replace the missing 7 to 10 foot section there to shear up the dirt there. We're not agreeing with him on the speaker noise. We feel that it's viable to have it there, and he will have no impact. The lighting will comply with your ordinance, the hours of operation we're asking for, and that we did listen to DRC regarding the transients that might occupy that back area, and we changed our landscaping plan to comply with DRC's request. In fact, we've anything DRC requested, we've complied with. I'll talk about this briefly. Mr. Lord will come up and explain it in detail. Again, their study took nighttime pre-project decibel level readings and post-project decibel readings, and there was no increase. I think the most important finding in the report that makes it understandable to us lay people who don't do noise studies or read them all the time is this chart here showing pre and post daytime and nighttime noise levels at each of the three properties adjacent to the property. And again, to have an impact through CEQA, you have to raise the decibel level by 2 decibel levels to have an impact. And we're not raising the decibel levels at all. They're completely in compliance with the element. And my last slide is that for the human being to be a viable addition to the city's businesses, we need the hours of operation to be similar to their competitors. That is the only way we can stay viable, and that the conditions placed on the project must be based on factual data, and that the noise element sets your noise standard. The project clearly complies with the standard, established standard, and the city must decide the appeal on the basis of the established standard and must exercise its decision making on a uniform, consistent basis. And that's what we're asking you to do here tonight, that we understand this is a discretionary approval, but your discretionary approval must be based on reasonableness. And Dr. Lord can speak to the noise, and we've shown you through the report that we're in compliance. So therefore, we respectfully request that you uphold the Planning Commission approval of this project, that all the planning commissioners supported this project when the motion was made to have the project be approved without any hours of restriction and without any speaker restriction. We got a complete approval by the Planning Commission, and that you deny the appeal and you adopt the appropriate conditions of approval. We do have one condition regarding site improvements because they had left them off of the staff report. It has to do with public works, so basically that the plan that we submitted to public works, Nick in public works, be adopted and with any engineer, and to work any details out with the city engineer, and that would be good. And then I think that I will let you talk or let you ask your questions of Dr. Lord, and he can answer all your technical questions much better than I could.
Thank you, Dr. Lord. Good evening.
Good evening, council members.
Noticed one of our questions is where you've looked at the noise. Is it at that actual location? You know, how does that modeling work? And I know you're going to be speaking up at this level, and if you could try to bring it down for all of us to understand right here. But would appreciate that. And then as you kind of go through that, then we'll ask you some clarifying questions.
Thank you for clarifying that. One of my favorite expressions from someone else is, I'm a noise geek, so you don't have to be.
Very nice.
I can explain these, some
and
of these concepts.
And if you could come a little closer to the microphone.
Yes, sorry. And so I've heard many questions this evening and some assertions this evening that I can explain fairly briefly. That's difficult for engineers and scientists, but I'll try to cut to the chase. As far as the speaker itself, the speaker board, the order board. My colleague, Sarah Talbots, signed the report, and at the end, she states, I just reread her conclusion. The drive-through automatic volume control speaker system means that the ordering board and the queue for the drive-through will not be audible at any of the neighboring addresses, neighboring residents. And I read that, reread that, and I agree fully that there's no way that it can be audible. And one of the conditions that was just mentioned was measuring 45 decibels at the property line of the nearby residents. That will never happen. 45 decibels only happens near the speaker, within 15 or 20 feet of the order board. And by the time it gets 100 feet away, it has attenuated several decibels. It falls off 6 decibels for every doubling of the distance. So if you go 30 feet, 15 feet, let's say it's 45 decibels. If you go 30 feet, it's 39 decibels, and so forth and so on to 100 feet out. So it attenuates, the sound attenuates tremendously with distance. Excuse me, and so it will not be heard, will not be audible. So I will pay for the noise wall if it's necessary. I feel so confident. The applicant was our client, but we received no directions from them. They asked us to do a noise study and let them know what we found. And this is what we found. And it looks very positive to us. We can assert, because we use this software that generated these beautiful graphics all the time for projects up and down the Central Coast. We work with wineries who are scheduling events. We have measured loudspeakers and 100-person parties at certain distances, so we're quite confident in how we project these sound levels with our software, and they're plus or minus 1 or 2 decibels from the actual measured sound level. We did not have time to measure, to do a 24-hour measurement on El Camino Real, so we accepted the city's average daily traffic flow, and that comes to us over the years. There was a sound flow study in 2010, I believe, so we added a multiplication factor for growth of the city. And we arrived at a what we confidently feel is today's traffic flow average on El Camino Real. Now, if you go out there for a 10-minute period, that's going to be different from the average. The average is measured hourly and daily, average daily traffic, ADT. And the software that we use takes that number of average daily traffic and distributes it statistically through a 24-hour day. So we're able to predict that on average there will be 200 cars per hour on El Camino Real during nighttime hours. So we didn't actually go out at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. and measure 200, because in a way that would be a fool's errand, because it would vary from day to day. This is an average over a week-long and year-long period. It's the annual average daily traffic.
So you said you feel, you know, extremely confident, to the extent that you said you would put in a retaining wall. I know you're joking when you say that, but that's how confident you are. So if I'm hearing you correctly, at 5:08 a.m., if it's one of those lulls where there's absolutely no traffic and it's pretty silent, you feel confident that none of those three locations abutting the property would hear the speaker?
Okay, let me define what I mean by not audible, and that is that the sound from the speaker would be lower than the ambient sound level from all the traffic in the area, from adjacent streets and skateboarders and everything that's happening, birds and so forth. The ambient level is about 42 to 45 decibels in the early morning hours. And so if the speaker is at 45 decibels, 2 or 3 dB, or even 15 dB above that ambient level, it will not be heard 100 feet away, will not be audible.
I see.
It won't rise above the average ambient sound level in the area.
Okay. Let's see, Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, I believe you had some questions.
Yes. I'm always concerned about an assertion of you won't hear something at all. Now, I understand you to correct
so,
that to say
so
that,
yes.
that you're asserting that you wouldn't hear it over the average ambient noise.
If it is 45 decibels.
Right.
If someone shouts,
understand,
hey, Joe.
But that you wouldn't hear the speaker over the average ambient noise, and the speaker, of course, is meant to adjust downward for ambient noise, so that's very helpful.
It's but, dynamic.
Yeah, but as the mayor said, if there was absolutely nothing going on, and it, I've been out in our community at 5 in the morning, and there's it's a unfortunately, it's a very slow town, at least you know certain hours of the night. And there are going to be lulls where there's zero traffic driving by, although I suppose there would be traffic on the freeway. And I'm concerned to say that you would hear nothing. I mean, if the ambient noise fell you know, over the course of this hour from 5 to 6 a.m., if it fell sometimes to, you know, really low, are you saying you still wouldn't hear it, or you would hear it at that point because it's below the average?
I understand what you're saying, and I have walked in rural areas and measured 20 decibels,
mm-hmm.
background sound level. So it could conceivably descend to the 20s, 25, 26 decibels.
Gotcha.
The speaker at that point, the automatic volume control speaker, would dynamically respond to that and would not rise mm-hmm. to more than 15 decibels above 20. In other words, it wouldn't be more than 35 or 40
gotcha.
Decibels.
Okay, and, you know, not to make it hard to order, I don't want the classic, you know, drive-through speaker routine where somebody can't understand the the person on the other end, but can the AVC be adjusted to go even below a 15 decibel differential between the ambient noise and the speaker?
Not only can it be adjusted, the answer is yes, it can be adjusted, but the speaker itself is highly directional. So the speaker is aimed directly at the driver of the car.
I understand.
If we were to turn the speaker towards El Camino Real, someone 180 degrees from that direction would have even less chance of hearing it.
Right,
because
understand.
It's a directive.
And in terms of the modeling itself, you know, in the old days, I imagine somebody had to stand out there, make some noise, and somebody had to stand out there with a decimal meter and detect the noise at various locations. But with this kind of computer modeling, I'm assuming you are able to simulate the existing structure being torn down and the, you know, and the proposed project with its precise height and width, et cetera.
It's completely amazing. Just to make it, okay. I mean, just a brief story. I'm a retired Cal Poly professor. I was one of those guys with a sound level meter and a needle on it, taking notes over a one-hour period, nothing mm-hmm. digital. And in 20 years, all of that has changed completely. Mm-hmm. The software is completely automatic, and thousands of people have contributed measurements to the building of this software, and so scenarios like this have been studied in hundreds, mm-hmm. thousands of places
right.
and duplicated, and okay. we're quite confident.
Right.
In the
and I can accept all that. I look at the potential for noise bothering the neighbors, and I frankly, I don't see a problem with the speaker, but what I see the potential of is, you know, there's five cars waiting in line, you know, wrapped around the back side of the building, and car number five, you know, likes to play loud music with a thumping stereo, and, you know, car number four likes his loud muffler or has a zooped-up engine or whatever, you know, he's driving a very large diesel or a Harley, you know, et cetera. Do you try to address in any way those kind of, maybe in your world they're a one-off, but they could happen. Do you try to address those at all?
Yes.
And how do you address
that? We tried to address that mm-hmm. in a simplified way. You see a string of cars waiting in a queue mm-hmm. to place their order in graphic number 2, nighttime DB post-project. And you see a thin red line passing through those cars.
Yes.
And the cars themselves are 1.5 meters high, about 6 feet tall, and they act as noise barriers for El Camino Real. So if you line up a stack of cars like that, El Camino Real sounds are blocked at that point by the cars. But we put a red line through them, which is a noise source. So we added, we took noise away and we added noise in and played God with this scenario, and we got those results, and we're very confident of that. That noise, that red line is 55 decibels, so it's slightly above ambient. and then the cars block about 10 decibels from El Camino Real. So we get a balance of what would happen if we put objects in line, queued up to order coffee.
And if the council said, okay, this all sounds great, I trust the data, but you know, a year from now there's complaints, and I'm thinking back for our community development director that this happened at our Home Depot, where there were, after, you know, some years after construction, there were complaints about delivery trucks and things like that. Point being, there were post-construction complaints. You, as a sound expert, what is the the cheapest way to provide, you know, sound mitigation along a property line?
Cheapest.
I'm sorry, what?
Most cost-effective way,
yes,
of blocking noise. First of all, you consider the position of a sound barrier. The worst place to put a sound barrier is halfway between the source, which would be the speaker, mm-hmm, and the receiver over here, the resident. So you wouldn't, okay, put the sound barrier in the middle. You'd put it next to the source, or you'd put it next to the resident.
Okay.
So you could build a barrier of equal height near the resident, and it blocks all line of sight sound. If you can't see the speaker in the distance, then it's an effective noise barrier as well as visual barrier. Mm-hmm. Same way if you put a barrier next to the speaker itself. If it blocks line of sight of the speaker, you can't see it, then it's also going to block the noise very effectively, 10 to 20 decibels blocking.
Mm-hmm. And what is the cheapest kind of material or form of
cost effective
of doing that? Maybe cheap isn't a great word, but cost-effective way of...
Well, at the Santa Maria County Fairgrounds, we did a study similar to this a couple of years ago, and we used straw bales as a noise barrier. And those are very effective, but it's kind of temporary. But it fit into the aesthetic at
gotcha,
the fairgrounds.
Yeah, great.
So that was the cheapest.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Council Member Funk, did you? Okay.
Thank you. If you would stay up for a moment, please, Dr. Lord. I think what we're all struggling with here in terms of the sound is the difference between average sound and peak sound. So, because, you know, if it's a quiet hour at 5 in the morning, and, you know, and the only thing that happened is, you know, three Harleys drove by at once, you know, outside your bedroom window, well, it was a very quiet hour on average, but the baby is awake. So, you know, because of the peak. So could you give us some examples of what would be a 15 decibel sound? If the speaker is 15 decibels over ambient sound, what's a 15 decibel sound?
What is 50? 50?
15, 1-5.
15.
15.
That's so low. Well, let's say you're asleep and it's 15 decibels in where you're sleeping, and you're in a hotel room, let's say, and you're paying a lot of money for that room, and it's 15 decibels. What will it take to wake you up? Well, sleep disturbance. Sleep disturbance is caused by about 5 to 10 decibels rise in sound. So if there's a peak that lasts more than a second or two that's 10 or 15 decibels above the ambient, that's a serious matter if you're asleep. That's the worst case situation, but is that what we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about, if I understand the technology by which the outdoor speaker adjusts its volume, it adjusts its volume so that it is 15 decibels above the ambient level of noise measured at that moment. So if it's adding 15 decibels to it, I was asking for an example of what of a 15 decibel sound. Just to calibrate that in practical terms.
Well, yes, let's use some examples of what levels of sound are. When two people are conversing, they generally talk at a level, if you measured it, 55 decibels between them. I was sitting here earlier measuring the sound level in this room, and it was 61 decibels because it's amplified sound. And if you whisper to someone sitting next to you, it's about 30 decibels. If you are 2 feet away and whispering, 30 decibels. So those are some examples. In the city measures, or I'm not absolutely certain that Atascadero does this, but most cities in California measure LEQ, maybe you've seen that expression, and LMAX. So LEQ is the average over a one-hour period generally, average sound. And that's what we're talking about here in these graphs, LEQ, right. One-hour average. But LMAX is the maximum that's reached in a one-hour period. It can happen over 1 second, or it can happen 10 times. Mm-hmm. That's LMAX. Those are instantaneous sounds. And so if a Harley drove past at 4 in the morning, 85 decibels on El Camino Real, that could create an LMAX that would be audible through the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So this would be a substantially less of an equivalent than the, you know, than say a Harley versus your regular car driving by.
Right.
Okay. Now that's, I'm just trying to calibrate this in practical.
Well, there's
terms.
So many unique situations, but it can be tightly and closely defined, and so we're using the same measuring stick that the city does, LEQ 1 hour, LMAX during.
Right. Okay. And I'm asking about the max measures, because my understanding is that we are looking at averages and that the concerns about disruptions of the neighborhood are probably more about the peaks.
The same way around the airport, when an airplane is landing, that's the maximum sound at an airport.
Yeah, as opposed to the average sound at the airport over the course of an hour when one plane has landed. Yeah, okay. I think we've got enough there. If you think of other good examples that will help illustrate the level of sound that's being added, feel free to add those later on. I was out at the property today, and I noticed that the backyard fence, the back of the property, is a combination of wall and fence, and the fence is not always completely continuous. There are gaps in the fence. It's a fence. It's been around a bit. It's a wooden fence. And I was wondering if there are opportunities to improve the sound barrier by simply making that fence a little
bit. Well, of course. We talk about noise walls and fences. And mm-hmm. fences have gaps between the planks. And sound goes through those gaps, but only a small percentage. So a fence can be a noise barrier after a fact of a sort, but a masonry noise barrier is the gold standard for stopping noise. So a fence can stop 5 decibels, but a masonry wall would stop 12 decibels.
Okay. And how many decibels of added sound does the speaker create by the time it gets to the back wall of the property?
The back wall being about 100 feet away.
Yeah.
The speaker is, as I read the graph, is 45 decibels at 15 feet. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
But at a very near distance, the speaker is at 45 decibels, the speaker board, the ordering board, or 15 dB above ambient. Mm-hmm. By the time we get 100 feet away, the sound from the speaker has attenuated 6 decibels for every doubling of the distance. So at 10 feet, 20 feet, 40 feet, it goes down 6 decibels, 12 decibels, 18 decibels in a very short period. So by the time it reaches 100 feet away, it's 20 decibels or more below ambient sound level, inaudible.
Okay, so that peak contribution of the speaker to the sound, which is not going to be more than 15...
At the residential property line.
Yeah, at the back residential property line.
Not measurable.
Yeah, okay.
Can't hear it. Can't measure it.
Okay, thank you. And that reflects the volume control.
Automatic.
Automatic volume control.
Dynamic automatic volume control. It's continually adjusting to 15 dB above ambient.
Okay. I have questions for the applicant's representative. Thank you.
Any other?
I think that concludes for you, Dr. Lawrence. Thank you.
That's my last question for you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Ardini, I think we might have some more questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I will let you go ahead and continue on.
One of the things when I looked at the property, and we looked at the property together today, one of my questions was about the storage building, mm-hmm. And whether or not there would be trucks delivering at unusual hours of the day, of the day or night. Can you indicate what hours of you would expect deliveries to be occurring during for that? Any deliveries or pickups from that storage
sure.
building?
Sure. So the what we're talking about is the warehouse, which is the existing building on the site. And there is a loading dock proposed next to the warehouse. The applicant plans on storing additional supplies there for this human being project, potentially one in Atascadero, I'm sorry, one in Templeton and one in Morro Bay. So it's a very small building to store minimal supplies there. And the hours of operation would be no earlier because of the city ordinance, then 7 a.m. Would be the earliest if anybody would show up. My guess is that Pat may know more of how many trips would need to be done in a day. Probably it would be more like a couple trips a week at the maximum because of, you know, they're not very big businesses and just to restock them on occasion.
Yeah, your average semi is probably bigger than the business.
By far.
Yeah. Would you be comfortable? I saw that in other projects, like the Walgreens example that Mr. Dunsmore mentioned, that a condition had been placed on delivery hours. That might have been during construction.
So delivery, you mean restricting the warehouse hours for delivery?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have no objection to that.
Okay. And Mr. Dunsmore also put out in concept the idea of a performance-based standard for evaluating the project after it's built so we can, you know, see how it works and whether or not any additional steps might be needed. Do you have any objection to
how about can I tell you my reaction first?
that would be fine.
So I would have to say I was sitting next to Dr. Lord and my reaction was sort of knee-jerk of why, and it's just another expense for my applicant to absorb who's trying to bring a new business into the city. However, Dr. Lord calmed me down and he said, there's not going to be a problem at all, Pam, because your ambient noise level is so low at your property lines that we're not going to have a problem. So I have no objection to it, and I'm sure my...
We'd love to hear from you, but we need to have you come to the speaker. Thank you. We need
and
for the public
is,
record.
And this is Pat Mitchell, who's the owner of the property.
Good evening, Mr. Mitchell.
Good evening. My only comment on it is that it's based on science. You know, if somebody registers a complaint, that it's actually proven that there's, you know, there's a problem there. You know, other than that, we don't have any objection to it.
Understand.
So I think if you're considering putting a post-project performance noise study on it, then that would... alleviate Mr. Mitchell's concern because that would be science-based, just as the study that's before you today. However, we don't see any need for it, and we prefer it not to be placed on the project because of the expense.
Fair enough. Thank you.
And I think that wraps up our questions. Thank you, Ms. Giardini.
Okay, thank you. And if I may come back after the
yes,
public comments.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
With that, any members of the public wishing to speak on this item, please come to the podium, state your name for the record, and you will have 3 minutes.
Good evening, members of the council. My name is Al Fonzi. I live at 7880 Sinaloa, the house directly behind the project in question. We've talked a lot about the speakers and how it can be mitigated. And I guess there's a lot of technology involved in this, and I can't question that. And if it's as good as they say, it's great. I do hope you adopt the first recommendation, or the one measure A, I guess, with some conditions to ensure that if this business ever changes these speakers, that they be equal to or greater than capability of what's been mentioned here today. The real issue is the time of opening at 0500. 5 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday morning, you can almost hear a cat cross the street. It's so quiet. I've lived at this address for 26 years this year. It's a 104-year-old structure, and the Historical Society tells me it's the fourth oldest house in town. It does not have any air conditioning in it. So in the summertime, we have our windows open at night to cool it off and seal it up in the morning. Most of the time, it's not a problem. And living a block off El Camino, I don't expect to be quiet as a churchyard all the time, especially after 7 a.m. because it's a major intersection. But at 5 o'clock in the morning, it's really quiet. By 6 o'clock, you start hearing people move around the streets, cars opening, things like that. And I have construction crews that get up at 6 o'clock in the morning in the summer, and they all go to work in front of my house, and the guy usually comes blaring a stereo, so my wake-up time without an alarm clock is usually 6 a.m., whether I want it to be or not. But 5 a.m., it's really quiet, and it makes a big difference between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m., let alone 7. I'm not sure how the noise studies are actually conducted other than computer simulation. I know that no one came on my property and talked to me about it. That one house to the rear of the R2 symbol up there is currently occupied by my tenant, who's a disabled Iraq war veteran with PTSD. He has a service dog, and that is also a good alarm clock because anything disturbs that dog, he barks. So you're having a business that basically is going to generate traffic by design, idling trucks, all the things that go along with that. And whatever you decide here tonight, we have to live with. I have to go back home to that, as does my family. And the 20-plus people that are immediately surrounding those two large buildings are four-unit apartment buildings with about 15, 16 occupants. The property to the right of us or to the south of it is another single-family residential home just bought by a young couple. And, of course, my home, which has six residents in it. So about 22 people right now will be directly impacted by this. Basically, I don't know how to fix this other than just directing something to be done to attenuate the sound to sound wall, because there's going to be a lot of noise, some light. We're going to have a continuous flow of traffic 7 days a week from 5 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. And I can just tell you right now, I know what Atascadero streets are like at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It's really quiet most sections of town, and that section in particular. But by 7 o'clock, it's pretty bustling. So I hope whatever you decide here tonight, you take that into consideration. And so if we do have a problem a year from now, I've got some mechanism where I can go back and say, look, this is becoming intolerable for a lot of people. We have constant noise. We're constantly being woke up at 5:30 in the morning. So with that, I'll just say thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Once again, Jeff Oslin. So as an expert, as a Honda generator salesperson, an ambient noise, 59 decibels is the highest noise that an EU 7000 generator produces, which is what you see on most food trucks at our events in the city, and you don't hear them. It's also the same generators that the police department and the fire department use for either their lights. I know the chief owns one. The police department uses it in their DUI checkpoints and emergency backups as well. So ambient noise in the speaker is probably irrelevant to the drive-through. The only concern out of the whole thing should be, like Mr. Fonzie said, is a vehicle cranking the stereo at 0500 in the morning. That might be the only concern. Hearing the speaker box is not going to happen at those decimal ratings. That's really your answer on ambient sound. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Come on forward.
Good evening. My name is Nick McClure. I'm a resident of Atascadero as well as a small business owner with a business on El Camino Real. I have been asked professionally here today to represent the interests of Dr. William Carnazzo, who owns the property to the south, the commercial property to the south, at 7865 El Camino Real. He just wished to express his support of this business, looks forward to seeing the improvements on El Camino, the improvements to this building that are currently vacant and kind of a shambles. And in general, he's reviewed the project plans and the site improvements and is enthusiastic to see this go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, I will ask Ms. Giardini if there's anything that you would like to respond to from public comment.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a few things, if I could. go there. First of all, as Dr. Lord said, a whisper has 25 dBs. And so if you're talking 15 decibel levels above the ambient noise, that's why it drops off and it's not measurable at all at the property lines. Now, if you look at the chart before you, Mr. Fonzie's property is R2, and his maximum post-project nighttime noise level is 38 dBs, which is below your ordinance standard, and that's post-project. So there is the comments regarding noisy trucks are true, but your own ordinance exempts the noise of customers on parking lots, so it's then that becomes not an issue. The other issue about opening at 5 a.m., if we open at 5 a.m., the noise, ambient noise level isn't going to make any difference because it's shown by science that it's not going to affect any of the surrounding property owners. The property owner to the south is in support of this project. Property owner to the north is in support of this project. Did not show up tonight, but we spoke to him several times. And the property owner to the east of this project, his noise impact is showing to be below what the noise ordinance requires. And so then it leads me to say, if you go to finding number three, what are you going to base your finding on? What facts are you going to find it on to find that it doesn't fit the health and safety and welfare of the community, and that your finding and your motion to approve or deny the project has to be based on facts, and the science has given you the facts tonight, and that those facts uphold the chart in front of you, and that we've addressed all your issues, and that we're hoping that you approve the project with the condition that we restrict our hours from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., not be open 24/7. That's not what we were asking for, and that you include the civil engineering condition about site improvements. And then the one condition, I think it was number 17, be stricken from the record or modified to meet what we were vested under. Other than that, thank you.
Thank you. I will now close public comment and bring it back to council for deliberation. I will say that I was the one to appeal this. We've had conversations at council in the last few months about drive-throughs and impacts on neighborhood, from traffic to what that means for future development and intersections, what it means to neighborhoods, especially when you run into a compatibility issue of something like this that is so unique. And I really wanted to make sure that we took a look at this, because while we're talking about very few residents, everyone matters. And the business matters. We're so glad that you're coming to Atascadero, and I hear from our community development director what a wonderful product you have, and so we're looking forward to this. We want to ensure that compatibility, and I think I agree with Ms. Giardini about this does need to be based on fact and science. I think I'm looking at these numbers knowing that they're based upon modeling, not the numbers from that specific site, which I don't want to ask you to go do that. I know that that would be an added expense. I think because Dr. Lord does appear so confident, I might like to ask my colleagues about entertaining the idea of that performance standard, since you do feel so confident in that, and that I think could give confidence to the surrounding residents and to us. So that's my thought, and I will ask my colleagues where they fall on this. See Council Member Newsom.
I'm in support of a business coming to our town and cleaning up an area that would be so ideal for a new concept, a new idea. The things that I struggle with is now we've suddenly moved the traffic up off of El Camino to a higher elevation and affecting the residents in there. I do think that we do need to do a performance condition up on this project because this is something new for us in the fact that we are reevaluating the drive-throughs and the ways that our community business functions with our residents. It's really hard to incorporate them as much as we'd like to and kind of continue to provide the quiet neighborhood at 5 o'clock in the morning. It is very, very quiet. I do want people to be able to enjoy their weekends and not be afflicted by constant sound. So I'm more inclined to also include some type of additional walling. I don't know if we need to do a sound. I don't think we need to go to the extent of a sound wall, but some barrier in the back that buffers not only the additional traffic, but just the odd noises that are suddenly going to be moved off of El Camino and up. I think on that incline, you've kind of shifted where the traffic is. So I want to make sure that we are appeasing community as a whole, not just one, and I don't want to penalize the business owners because I know this is an expensive project for you already. So those are just my thoughts.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, followed by Councilmember Funk.
Thank you. I don't want to impose an existing condition prior to construction. It's too easy for us to do that sometimes at great expense to applicants, and we want to encourage business. But I am a little concerned that, you know, this is modeled. It's based on average ambient average ambient noise, and not the peaks that can occur, you know, from loud vehicles. And so I understand, Dr. Lord's confidence about essentially there being no additional noise from the ambient background. I wouldn't want to, a year from now, let's say, require another study. I'm much more into, simple on-the-ground facts. If I'm in Mr. Fonzie's backyard or the apartments over there, and they can show me, they pulled out their cell phone at 5:23 in the morning because there's an extremely loud vehicle, and that's happening, once a week. That's the kind of evidence I'd want to see, not another sound study, because, frankly, another sound study based on averages really isn't, what this is about. It's about neighbors being woken up because of the operation. I don't want to limit the hours of operation beyond. I mean, I do want to limit them. I frankly think we've kind of been remiss in not limiting other drive-throughs at some point. I want to support this business being able to open at 5 o'clock. That's the nature of this business. But I am concerned, and so I'm open to having a conditional or a post-construction condition that would be dependent on, that would only come into play if the neighbors provided, evidence of repeated violations, and I'm sorry, Al, if that means going to your fence line and, filming a bunch of noise in the morning in order to prove it. That's what I'd be looking for in the way of proof, if you will, before requiring the construction of something at additional cost. So, otherwise, I'm supportive of it, and I'm supportive of the hours of operation. I think it's important that we let a locally owned business fairly compete with a nationwide giant that opens at 4:30. So, thank you.
And Councilmember Funk.
I think we have to proceed with great caution on this one, just with the full knowledge that all of us are very aware. We all know the neighbor who has spoken and aware that he's the spouse of my colleague who's recused herself appropriately from this discussion. And one of the things that if we treat this situation differently, because a person of wealth, connection, or prominence is raising an issue or complaint, that's the stuff that drives people absolutely nuts about government. They feel betrayed. So we have an obligation to be fair to our applicant, that the applicant gets the same treatment regardless of who it is that lives over the back fence. At the same time, the resident who is raising this concern has a right to be treated as a resident of this community and be treated fairly and considered, his concerns considered, without respect to, you know, any issue of consideration about where we may agree or disagree in his commentaries. So my commitment to you both is that I've thought about this carefully and am taking those, both of you, my commitment is to treat you both fairly. And I'm sure that that's something that my colleagues also want to do, in fairness to both. That being said, I don't see evidence that we've required conditions, restrictions on operations, hours of operation, or hours of amplified sound from other businesses. I did go out, I don't have fancy studies, but I did go out and pace the distance from the outdoor speaker to the fence line that's nearest to residences at the three locations that seemed useful, at the site location, at Walgreens, and at the Starbucks on Santa Rosa, and also at Brewitt, which doesn't have amplified sound. So that I won't go into that one further. But the distances are pretty comparable. There, it's from the Starbucks at Santa Rosa to the fence line to the sound wall nearest the residences. I got it 44 paces. At Walgreens and at the expected site for human being, it was about 50 paces. So it's a little bit, the distances are a little bit larger than we see over at the place that was designed with a sound barrier on Santa Rosa. And the Walgreens, of course, list itself as a 24/7 pharmacy. So those concerns in the middle of the night are even greater. What we see here from what I hear from the expert testimony, and I have no reason to doubt that expert testimony. As we saw in the last appeal that we dealt with as a council, the expert testimonies and the ability to ask questions of the experts can be very helpful. And we appreciate the sound study that was provided and the opportunity to ask those questions. It does tend to address, to my mind, if we're adding a less than a whisper to the sound, then I think we don't have an issue. Or at least we shouldn't expect to have an issue. So I would, I think the Planning Commission got it right. In terms of not applying any restrictions on the amplified sound or the hours of operation, I do think that the performance standard is a useful thing to add here for all concerned, to make sure that that after it's in place, that we have the opportunity, if there are significant complaints about regular noise issues, that we can have the opportunity to revisit whether an additional sound wall or additional better fencing or some other consideration would be appropriate as mitigation to make it work. That being said, I do hope that everybody involved, including folks who drive up and become your customers, would be gracious to the neighbors. Encourage more people to acquire electric vehicles. When we drive up in my little electric car, it makes no sound at all.
Oh, but you blast your music, don't you, Susan?
Well, yes, I could, but maybe we can all be kind to one another and respectful of that. I mean, it is not, in terms of the sort of property rights expectation, it is no surprise to anyone who lives a block off of El Camino Real that El Camino Real is our major commercial thoroughfare. And any precedent we do to add new requirements to this business is something that we would have to be prepared to apply to every business along El Camino Real and 41 that backs up onto residential property, which is a lot of them.
we shouldn't, that's not something to enter into lightly, and it doesn't seem warranted here.
All right. So after all of that, it sounds like we all agree. It's what I heard, I think. Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Along the lines of what Councilmember Funk mentioned at the end there regarding you hope that customers will be cooperative, and I would suggest not necessarily that we put it in as a condition that you know perhaps you put a sign out in the line on the side of the building that's away from El Camino Real, that is, and people are waiting, like, you know, this is a residential area, please keep your music down, whatever, you know, and that is a matter of operation. If somebody comes through like that, they tell them, hey, can you keep it down? I don't know if that would be worthy of making a condition. I don't think so. But certainly it would be to your benefit to encourage customers with a reminder, you know, perhaps a little sign or something.
My only question, I know you closed
our public comment isn't open right now, yeah. So...
But does that fall under requiring a sign, adding
it
to the sign
ordinance?
We're
not adding anything, no.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Speaking of adding things, though, to get more towards making a motion, Mr. Dunsmore had a suggested thing that at first, I don't know if you could go back to that language you proposed, Mr. Dunsmore. At first I was thinking, well, that's not necessary because, a neighbor could complain under the existing noise ordinance under these conditions, but I think Ms. Giardini made a point regarding, you know, our noise ordinance does not apply to noise produced by customer vehicles. In that sense, if a neighbor were to complain about the noise, but the noise was being caused by customer vehicles, that complaint would not fall under our noise ordinance. Is that a correct statement?
I don't know, honestly. That's an interesting question because it's the land use that has queuing, that has cars going through, that may have stereos that, you know, may impact these residences. I don't think our noise ordinance speaks to traffic noise not being subject to these standards. But is that traffic noise or is that noise because there's a drive-through window there and people are queuing? So there's a little bit of ambiguity, and I feel hesitant to really clearly answer that question with a yes or no.
Because for me, the difference here between the application of our noise ordinance is that here we're making a finding of neighborhood compatibility. We're not making a finding of compliance with the noise ordinance.
Right.
We're making a finding of neighborhood compatibility, and so I don't want to end up with a situation where a neighbor complains about noise and it's like, well, hey, that doesn't count because it's customer vehicles. I'm essentially would be willing to make a motion in favor of draft resolution B, which is to deny the appeal and affirm the Planning Commission's approval, allowing the hours of 5 to 9, deleting item 17, and adding the condition mentioned by the applicant that Public Works wanted. I'm willing just to go there, but I'm open to a conditional approval, or not a conditional approval, but a post-construction
condition.
We're
talking about the performance condition, and possibly this is something that we've been here for 2 hours. Maybe we need to take a quick break and you run through some language, but I think what Mayor Pro Tem Borbo is saying is let's not focus it on the noise ordinance per se and get to this place where we're like, oh, we didn't do what we needed to do to actually take care of a problem that we didn't know was going to be a problem. Or we could possibly anticipate. I mean, let's just say that this becomes the favorite place of the Harley riders to come through at 5 in the morning and you've got, you know, a bunch of them queuing up. Obviously, that's a big assumption. But just that as an example, we would need to be able to look at something else sound-wise that protects the neighbors if that becomes an issue that isn't just about the ambient noise over a two-hour period. So maybe if we take a 5-10-minute break, you could come up with some language that is less specific, not to open you up to a bunch of, and Dr. Lord, if you want to be, you know, have some input, would that be okay with our city attorney?
Okay. Why don't we do that? Why don't we take about a 10-minute break, come up with some language, and we'll come back and make this. We're ready to reconvene. If I could ask everyone to come back to the dais and take their seats.
Charles is holding it up.
Where did Charles go?
Saw one of my colleagues just a moment ago, and probably a Coke and a cookie. Dr. Pepper, all right. That's close, okay. All right, I think we have come to a place where we've got some language, and we're also informed that the resolution does have to be Resolution A, and we need to make sure that we make all the appropriate changes. So, Mayor Pro Tem, I will have you proceed.
Right. So, actually, it would be Resolution A, which allows us to, you know, add or amend conditions.
So you're moving.
I'm moving that we approve Resolution A, and where we delete Condition 17. We add the agreed-upon public works-related condition, and we add a condition, and Mr. Dunsmore, I believe, has the wording. Phil, do you have the wording that we're going to utilize on the
Yes, Council, I'm just trying to get that slide back up here.
Okay.
In just a moment, we'll have that back up here, and we can...
Yeah, as you're doing that, is it completely deleting number 17, or is it removing the language about the alternative method because there's still impact fees?
Right.
So the impact fees are adopted by code and required with any construction permit, so it's not necessary to have that as a condition. So I would suggest completely deleting number 17. Okay. However, I would like to engage Public Works Director on another item of relevance, because there is some improvements to the driveway that need to occur, and I think that Mr. DeBar might be aware of that. I think the applicant was concerned that at least we speak to that issue in the conditions so that it doesn't default to the normal code requirements, because I think there was some deviation of slope on the driveway that was necessary.
And I think that's what Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau was referring to. Right. Do we need to, I'm assuming to our city clerk, do we need to state something more specific to that public works?
Yeah, if we're adding a condition to the resolution, we need to say what that condition is.
So has that condition been agreed? That is, as I understood, it had been agreed upon between yourself and the applicant?
Right. The applicant submitted some revised site plans, and showing new driveway approaches with an ADA compliant sidewalk, city sidewalk, and then a 12% grade on the entrance and a modified 15% grade on the site leaving on the exit side. And that's fine. I'm okay with that.
So the condition should read, do what Nick says. That's fine.
I think you could probably just have like the site plan, you know, modified site plan to the satisfaction of the city engineer,
yes.
And then we can work that out.
Laura, is that sufficient for that part of the motion?
So we're going to add a condition modifying the site plan to the approval of the public works director.
Correct. You could do that or to the satisfaction of the city engineer.
Okay.
We usually put in the conditions.
Is there an email or anything between you that already kind of outlines that this is what's proposed and you agree to it?
Yes.
Okay. So you could say as agreed to by the applicant and city engineer.
Or perhaps even have the date. You know, you could have the date of the drawing.
Do we have that date?
I'm looking for it right now.
Okay.
We should also delete, if we're working off of draft resolution A, we should delete condition 20 in that draft.
We need to change
yes.
the time is what we need to do.
Well, we right. would be sticking that portion, if we deleted that thing, because we're sticking with the Planning Commission approval of 5 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Yes.
Right. So
yes.
I think Councilmember Funk's correct that we should delete condition 20. Since we're adopting Resolution A and it's mm-hmm. contained
yes.
in there.
Well, does it, where does it, let me get back to the resolution now.
Yeah.
We got too many pages here.
It's on 69 is where the last conditions are listed under Resolution A.
Okay. So I don't think we would delete that. We would say 5 a.m. to 9 p.m.?
Actually, I believe you're correct, since part of our point was we were surprised that we don't impose hours of operation on some of the other drive-thrus. So here we should be specific that it is 5 to 9. So I believe you're correct. We should leave condition number 20 in, but change it to 5 a.m. to 9 p.m.
I'm okay with that.
Okay, so I think we have a motion other than the specific wording of the condition, the public works related condition, but I think it relates to the slope of the driveway, then we add the condition related to driveway construction as agreed upon per email between city engineer and applicant's representative.
Right, the date of the drawing was January 8th, 2020.
Okay.
And it's a modified. I'd put something like on general conformance with preliminary grading plan dated January 8th, 2020, to the satisfaction of the city engineer.
Okay, one more time.
Slowly.
In general conformance with the preliminary grading plan.
Wait. Start with what are we doing? We're modifying the site plan or what? What's the whole condition?
Clear, this is not modifying an existing condition, correct? This is a
It sounds like
a
we're adding
new
one.
Condition.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
I think you'd probably put, site design shall be in general conformance with the modified preliminary grading plan dated January 8th, 2020, to the satisfaction of the city engineer. Because right now it is still preliminary, so you know we'd be reviewing final plans, and there might be slight tweaks to it.
Okay, and then the final thing is the performance condition, and Director Dunsmore.
Yes, I have some proposed wording for City Council's consideration, and that would be starting with this very last sentence: the use permit shall be subject to additional review upon receipt of noise or operational complaints. Additional mitigation may be warranted upon verification of noise or operational disturbances that impact residential properties.
And have you reviewed this with the applicant?
I've reviewed, yes, the general nature, not the exact wording, but the general nature of that condition with the applicant.
I would suggest that we insert the word ongoing in that language so that we're talking about ongoing noise complaints.
Okay.
There are, you know, unfortunately, occasional people who will be uncooperative with the neighbors and loud and obnoxious. But that, if it is a regular issue, that, you know, that's when we need to consider something happening.
I'll read that second sentence one more time. Additional mitigation.
I think recurring is a better word.
Right, yeah, recurring.
Because we're also talking about, we don't want, you know, someone comes and for some reason they have a bad experience and they, you know, those people that go on Yelp and give you bad reviews and suddenly they're calling the city and saying these awful things, obviously precluding those types of things. So recurring complaints.
Recurring. Yeah. Complaints of recurring noise complaints.
Additional mitigation may be warranted upon verification of recurring noise or operational disturbances that impact residential properties.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That works.
So I think we have a motion. I will ask our city clerk if that is all clear.
It's all clear for me. I just need to make sure it's all clear.
So why don't we have, Charles, if you want to completely restate all in order the
I'm moving the adoption of Resolution A with the deletion of condition number 17, changing condition number 20 to reflect hours of operation of 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., the adoption of the condition stated by the city engineer, and the adoption of the performance condition just read by Mr. Dunsmore.
Great. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And I know this was more time and hassle than you wanted or bargained for. I understand that. I do appreciate Ms. Giardini has been our main contact, and you were very forthcoming with information. And Dr. Lords tonight, we appreciate that because we do want this compatibility issue. We understand the science and the numbers, but then, you know, within that report it says, yeah, sometimes you just don't know what noise is going to do. And my hope is that you are right and nobody around notices. And I have a sense you are, but that protection for our residents, I think, is important. So thank you very much, and thank you for being here. You are going to improve a property that has long needed it, and we look forward to frequenting your business.
Thank you for investing in our community.
And now we are going to move on to, we're actually going to change our order of things. We are still waiting for our auditor, correct? Usually our auditor comes whenever we do this, and he sits here for hours and hours and hours, and I always feel bad for him. And so he isn't here at this point, which is good for him. He's on the way. He hasn't had to sit for hours. And we do welcome back our colleague, Councilmember Fonzi. So we will switch the order of things, and we'll go on to C2, the fiscal year 2019 annual road report, and this will be our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. A little overview of this item. This is related to the Measure F-14 tax revenue The City Council adopted Ordinance 581 in July 2014 prior to the residents voting on this sales tax measure. The ordinance outlines annual reporting requirements and also defines this annual road report to the Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee. The report includes, it's pretty basic, it includes financial statements, revenue, and expenditure information. As I mentioned, this half a cent sales tax measure began getting collected in Atascadero April 1st, 2015. We have reporting periods that sync up with the fiscal year, so July 1st through June 30th of each year. This last period that the report covers is from July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019. And the revenue totaled $2,351,012. And this revenue really represents a little more than half of the Bradley Burns sales tax that we have. That's a regular sales tax. And Director Rangel can explain that if you like. A little breakdown on the expenditures by project. So there were three projects that actually were part of this reporting period. A lot of times these projects span more than one reporting period because the reporting period ends right in the middle of construction season. So the 2018 pavement rehab project was during this reporting period had $1,270,000, a little over a dollar spent. The 2019 pavement rehab project, $181,000. And then the 2020 project we just got going right at the end of the last fiscal year, and there's just under $5,000 spent on that. So total fiscal year expenditures total $1,456,298. As I mentioned, these cross over fiscal years, and on the bottom there it shows the lane miles. This is centerline miles, roadway centerline miles. So each lane, if this is a two-lane road, the 2018 pavement rehab would be just under 7 miles. The fund balance at the end of the reporting period was just under $4 million. It should be noted that, as I mentioned previously, the 2019 and the 2020 projects had not started construction. So there was a lot of remaining budgeted expenditures on both those projects. The 2020, we would expect that at this point. The 2019 is finishing up right now, and both those combined budgeted expenditures are a little over $5 million. So, with the fund balance of just around $4 million, the 2020 rehab project, a lot of those costs won't start being incurred until construction starts, which will be in the springtime at the earliest. The 2018 project is shown here. The red roadways were rehab projects. The blue, which was Capistrano, was a surface treatment project. The 2019 project, which just is finishing up right now, was more on the west side. We had Balboa Road, Monterey, Del Rio, San Gregorio, and Garcia. And on the very bottom of the map there is Navarrete. This is next year's project that we're currently working on. It's on the east side of town and includes Sinaloa, Pueblo, Sombria, Palomar, Junipero, Sonora Valley, Garbata, and Robles. So this map kind of shows from when the Measure F-14 projects first started in 2015 through present, kind of all the roads that we've done. One road that I noticed was missing on here was Lakeview around the lake. That was done in 2015. But the red roads are the roads that are being done next year. The green roads are the previous F-14 projects. And the blue roads there represent the non-F-14 pavement projects. As part of the outreach on what the city is doing with these funds, we've since the start, we've always prepared a community road report. This is a handout that you should have with your report that kind of just summarizes the annual report, because the annual report that Director Rangel and her staff put together is a lot of numbers, and most people don't like looking at all those numbers, but, you know, I know I do. And but most of the public needs to look at a quick snapshot of what we've done. So this brochure that you have with your report kind of summarizes that and tries to capture, you know, if somebody could spend 5 minutes and look at that, it'd be great. But it pretty much has an overview. It contains an overview of the roadway system. And in the brochure, we actually added some of the 2019 information from the more recent citywide pavement evaluations and the PCIs. It has that Measure F-14 background. It has the summary of the financial statement and project expenditures, the overall pavement conditions, and what to expect next year. We actually, I'm not sure if anybody remembers, but we actually had to expand this brochure. There's two extra panels in it. It used to be, if you open it all the way up, it's legal size, and it used to be letter size, so we were finding that we weren't really getting all the information that we wanted to get out in there, so we decided that it might be better to make a little bigger brochure and inform the residents a little bit more of what we're doing. The estimated cost to print and mail these is to all the properties in town is between $4,000 and $5,000. And those the expenditures for doing this do not come out of the F-14, but is more general funds, which is why we talk about a little bit about the non-F-14 projects next year in the brochure. And we do that because here's a example is on the left there, what to expect in 2020. We'd get complaints in the years past when we didn't have that. It's like, hey, I thought you were doing Santa Lucia next year. I don't see it on here. And we still are, or we still were. It was a non-F-14 project, so we didn't include it on it. But this year we decided to include those roads that are non-F-14 for next year. Again, here's another panel. The summary, the upper right-hand corner there, it talks about the new pavement conditions and how we expect it to drop 3 points, but we actually went up 3 points, and I think it's something that we should really celebrate. The Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee met on December 12th. They reviewed this annual report. They also reviewed a draft of the community road report, and they approved this annual report and recommend the City Council approve it as well. So the recommendation tonight is to approve the fiscal year 2019 annual road report and also approve the 2019 community road report, and also direct staff to get that printed and distribute it to the residents. And I do not see any of our CSTOC members in, but I'm sure they're here, and some of them would like to have made it, but
in spirit
for sure. But it seems like a very nice group of people, and really I think, you know, if the council and staff are doing our job and we're being good stewards of the money and showing that we're spending this in a wise way and getting as many miles paved as we can and in good condition, you know, I really look at that group as advocates for the program. This is a 12-year term on the sales tax, so obviously it's paying huge dividends. So with that, Director Rangel, and I can answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. I didn't have this in front of me when I was on KPRL today, and a woman had called in and asked about San Anselmo. So I love that you put the non-measure F-14, so that woman happens to be listening. I didn't give her the city manager's office because that's the number I have off the top of my head, so if you get a call about that. But if she does happen to be listening, San Anselmo Road rehabilitation is on the 2020 capital improvement plan, so yay. Very good report. This is exciting. So just so all of you know, you will be getting this in the mail. We say in the coming month, Director?
I'd say, in the next month.
Month or so? Okay. Yeah. Next month or so. And just gives you a nice layout of where the funds are going, where they have gone, where they are going. And all of us really thank you as a community for passing Measure F-14 back in 2014 so that we could be doing this work and making the improvements to all of our roads. So great job in Public Works, you guys, just with using that critical point management and everything you do, just great job. And I saw you light up when Dr. Lords talked about being like a noise geek or a sound geek, he said. He was kind of like, all engineers are geeks, and Nick's all, hee, like, so he's our road geek, and we love it. We love him for it. With that, I will look to the lights for questions. We have Council Member Funk, followed by Council Member Fonzie.
Great report, Nick. Thank you very much. It's really exciting to see all of these roads being resurfaced and repaired in investing that the funds that the community has entrusted for that. I was interested. I saw that we have 3.4 centerline miles on this past year, and the average over the 3 years that you get, it looks like about 3.6. How many centerline miles did we do in non-Measure F-14 projects, if you would, approximately?
This past year, we did 5.4 miles. So there's, if you remember, during the summer, we were kind of grinding off, like, a big part of it was El Camino Real. And we did that work on a weekend. But we did surface treatment or micro-surfacing on a lot of roads. That was almost a little over 4 miles, 4.35 miles. And then the previous year, we actually did about 2 miles, but it was rehab work. So the 5.4 miles, you know, that was the cheaper treatments that we do. But the previous year, you think of El Camino up by San Anselmo and the major work that we did up there. That was a really thrash piece of roadway up there, and it's going to last us a long time now. Overall, I'll go back to this map here. But overall, with the non-F-14 projects, and we do want to have a maintenance of effort, so none of these Measure F-14 funds are displacing any other transportation or roadway funds that we were using before. Right. We're using still that same amount that we were using before, plus the F-14. But the census F-14 projects have started. There's been just under 10 miles of non-F-14 roadway funding that we've completed.
Okay, so I'm just doing some quick math here. So it sounds like the average number of non-F-14 road miles is about 3 miles a year, depending on what we did it. So we right. do maybe on average now 6 miles a year.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Because the number one comment I hear is, wow, this is great. I really am excited to see our community having better roads. Santa Lucia is wonderful. Encouragement. And the number two question is, and what about my street? When are we going to get to that? And, so the good news is, look at all this road we have. And the bad news is, look at all of those lines on that thing that are not in color. So if I do the math right, it's about once every 22 years we could get to each section of the street right now. So it will be important to ask the community to continue to invest in this so that we can at least show up once every couple of decades and do something with your street. Thank you.
Councilmember Fonzie, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you. I really like the improvements to this new brochure. This is great to have a map on there that you can differentiate the real miles that are done with our sales tax and the other miles that are being done. I did have one question. There's a slight discrepancy between our staff report and what's on what to expect in 2020 in the brochure, and that would be on Gabarda Road. In our staff report, it says Gabarda Road from Curbarell Avenue to the end, and on here in the brochure, it says you're also doing Tampico Road. Are you doing Tampico?
Tampico is not being done. That was not approved by council to be done. Is that on the brochure?
It is. It's the first one on 2020 rehab projects.
Oh. It says Curbarell Gabarda. Gabarda, Curbarell to Tampico, Tampico to end.
Is it two segments?
Okay. So that should just read Curbarell to end, I guess. You know, I think it was probably just something we wanted to try to differentiate, because a lot of times when you say to end, you know what I mean?
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I understood it and the public was sure, too.
Yeah.
The Gabarda always has big mud piles and things with drainage and a lot of problems with motorcycles and dirt bikes and other vehicles playing down there, and I just wondered if it's going to improve that condition as well.
Not so much that muddy piece.
You know what I'm talking about.
But for sure the roadway. And, you know, what I would suggest on that is maybe just saying Curbarell Avenue to Municipal Courtyard, because the city's courtyard is out there, and that might be a little more descriptive for people.
Very
good. If the council's
good.
Okay with that.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I want to echo the mayor and Councilmember Fonzie's comments on the brochure. I think it's great. I really like the what to expect 2020, and I do like that you added Measure F14, because like the mayor, the most frequent question I get is, when are you going to do something about San Anselmo? So having it on here, I think, is very helpful for folks to see both the F14 and the non-F14. With that, my question is, in the middle, when you open it up and you see the middle of the list of all the things that have occurred in the last several years, now that is just F14 projects, correct?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. And then on the side with the map, which is also great, it helps people visualize, I think. Of course, I'm a map geek, so I'm wondering about, you know, blue being the non-F14 pavement projects. I'm trying to remember, it looks up here like you did the upper parts of Del Rio and Alturas, if I'm making that out correctly. And normally, we've focused the F-14 money on what we'll call neighborhood streets and the non-F-14 on the arterials, you know, the El Caminos and the Portolas and things like that. And so I'm wondering what was the circumstance that, and I'm sure you probably told me at the time, but that we used non-F-14 money on Del Rio and Alturas.
That was the dissolved 1992 assessment district.
Okay, because Alturas is otherwise not a city-maintained road.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And or La Encinitas.
In Las Encinas.
Yeah. And so that was those roads we actually did a surface treatment to, and there's a remaining balance in that assessment fund, and
gotcha.
That was occurred a couple years ago.
Got it. Great. Thank you. And then on Monterey Road last year, 2 years ago now, I can't remember, you know, there was significant work done from San Anselmo to Campo. And the segment from Campo to, well, up to the end there, all the way to Garcia, I guess. There was some work done in the area near Del Rio this year. But as I understood it, we were going to do a like an overlay or whatever, the less costly work.
Microsurface.
Yeah, on that. But if I recall correctly, we were going to combine it. You were going to combine it with some work elsewhere in the city, so it hasn't quite been done yet.
Right. So
that will occur in 2020, or?
It will, yes. We have a 2020 pavement resurfacing project that we've got those plans done. It's actually looking at those this week, and we'll put those out for bid. But that would be a micro-surfacing. We had the plans that were put out on this particular project had like 20 times the amount there was like a bust in our consultant's estimated quantities, and it was like 20 times more or whatever, you know, microsurfacing estimated quantities. Yeah. So,
but it's going to save money, right, is the idea.
It'll save money, yeah, because we would have had to adjust that unit price, and it would have become a little more cost prohibitive. Plus, the time of the year that we're going into, we couldn't get that done anyways, and we'd have to wait till summer.
Gotcha.
So we negotiated with the contractor to remove that from the project, and we'll okay, still do that this upcoming summer.
Gotcha. And then when people ask me about roads, I point them to our website because, you know, when we started on this, and I think this has been a great success story for the cities, or the half-cent sales tax is a general tax. We could spend it elsewhere, but the council had committed to spending it on neighborhood roads and has done exactly that, and it's really showing, and you've done a great job managing it. But I point people to the website. You know, sometimes you want to see what's going on. And when we started, you know, we had several years of your planning out here, so you could kind of look 4 years into the future. To be honest, I haven't looked at the website recently. Does the information on the website stop with 2020 now, or does it go out to 21, 22,
23? We're constantly updating that, and okay, it does need some work. We've been looking at, you know, really clearing some of the older projects off there and freshening it up.
Great.
And I'm looking right now at it to see, but it does have the community road reports on there. It has a lot of the other list of projects, and yeah,
they're listed. Most folks, they're just curious about what's going to happen next year, and they want to look down the road for their road, and so that's kind of where I point them to, assuring them that the council is not involved in directly picking these roads. It's done on a professional basis by our engineer, and we just endorse it.
It needs to be updated.
Yeah,
I'm
great,
just looking at it right now.
Because it's a great site. So thank you very much. This is great.
Sure.
Thank you. Seeing no other council questions, I will open it up to the public for any public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Clapping. I see clapping in the audience. Wonderful. Thank you. Yes. Thanks to Public Works. Great job. I will close public comment and bring it back to council for a motion.
I move we approve the fiscal year 2019 annual road report and approve the 2019 community road report.
I'll second.
And do you maybe want to add in that one little change on the Gabarda wording?
With the modification to the Gabarda.
As stated by Tempe the Public Works
removal.
Director. Oh.
As stated by Public Works Director.
Have they all been printed to be mailed? Or is
no, these are drafts. So.
Okay, fabulous. Okay. Is that City Clerk? Have that okay? Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Newsom, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Wonderful. I found out Charles is all sorts of geek today. So we know he's a policy geek, he's a numbers geek, and now we know he's a map geek. Wow, he's competing. Yeah, we haven't even gotten
just
to the
wait.
Audit yet. So now we are getting to we're going back to item C1, which is our fiscal year 2018-2019 audit. And we will have our Administrative Services Director, Jerry Rangel, provide us that.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. So this evening we'll be reviewing the audited financial statements for the fiscal year 2018-2019. Which ended back in June of 2019. So Moss, Levy & Hartzheim is an independent accounting firm out of Santa Maria. They performed our financial audit today, or this year, and this evening we have Adam Geis here, who's a partner with the firm, and he will be available after this item for questions as well, as I will be. And this audit was conducted in accordance with all of the government auditing standards. And we received an unqualified opinion, which means the statements are in compliance and fairly presented according to those rules. Tonight's focus will be primarily on the general fund, since that is the fund that you have the most discretion with. and we will be reviewing a little bit of these F-14 funds that we just talked about and other non-F-14 general fund items as well. Wanted to kind of just give us a fiscal overview at the beginning. We'll be getting into a lot of details on this, a lot of different numbers, but first to kind of celebrate our success. I mean, Atascadero does a lot with a little. We have a very tight budget. We have very minimal staffing, but we have a great community. We have a great council, and councils, this council, councils before you, have really had a lot of forward thinking, a lot of vision for the future to really position this city in the best possible fiscal way. So we appreciate that. Good job on that. And our community really pulls together. We have a great community. We're always hearing about everybody pitching in and stuff. It's a great place to live, great community, helping each other, and a great staff. We're pulling in the same direction, working really hard towards council goals. So we should celebrate all of those things, and we did come in better than we expected this year, so that is terrific news. But that's not to say that we don't have our issues as well. Our needs well outbalance our resources. And so we do have a little ways to go, too. We've done well within the constraints of our budget, but not everything fits in that budget as well. So just to kind of keep that in mind as we go through these results. Our plan on the fiscal strategy is to use a little bit of the general fund reserves to kind of make up the gap in the budget. So that yellow line there is our projection for our 7-year that's included in our 2-year current budget cycle. It estimates the use of about $2.9 million in general fund reserves throughout this period. So why is all of this relevant kind of in the context of this audit? We just want to remind ourselves that we've done good, we're doing great, let's celebrate the success, but we still have a little ways to go. So that being said, let's get on to the numbers. So these columns are separate. This is the Measure F-14 funding that we just talked about. And then in the middle there is the non-Measure F-14, so everything except Measure F-14, and then the total there on the right. So all of these are all general fund revenues, so they're all included in your audit under general funds. But we do separate them out here and in our accounting records so that there's a lot of transparency so that we can see what those funds are being used for. So you can see there that the, as Nick was saying in the previous report, the Measure F-14 general fund balance at the end of the year was about $3.9 million, almost $4 million. And then we had a positive change in our non-Measure F-14 revenue or general fund of about $1 million over the course of the year, to end up with about just under $15 million in our general fund in total. This is really tiny. I don't expect you to read all of this. It is on 108 of your staff report, but it just kind of gives an idea on comparison. So this compares the prior fiscal year, 17-18, with the most recently completed year, 18-19. And I'll go over a couple of just notable changes. Revenue-wise, some of the bigger changes were in property tax revenue, development revenue, mutual aid, and then other revenues. Property tax revenue came in about 1.9 overall over the prior fiscal year of 17-18. And this is really key because property tax revenues, as you may recall, make up about 40 to 45% of our general fund revenue. The city saw a 5% year-over-year increase in secured property tax revenue, which is the largest and most stable of those components, so that's always good to see. This increase was really due to kind of just the overall increased economic development, upswing in the economy, and reclaim valuation from those Prop 8 write-downs. We're still kind of getting the benefit of that increase. Assessed valuation are still expected to continue to grow in the future, but at a bit of a slower pace.
development revenue was up about $275,000 over the year 17-18. And it we've really seen a big increase. Some of the larger projects, too, that were kind of anticipated to come in more in the 17-18 year, for one reason or another that got delayed, a lot of those projects came through in 18-19. So we're seeing all of that activity. And Director Dunsmore's department, I'm sure he would attest that it's quite busy these days. Current and upcoming project includes La Plaza, Home 2 Suites Hotel, Principal Mixed Use, Emerald Ridge, South Mirasol, and then upcoming even further, we have the Del Rio area, Colony Square, Dove Creek Commercial, Morrow Road, El Camino. We have a lot of activity going on, so that's great for development in the city. Mutual aid revenue was down about $300,000. This varies from year to year just based on the needs of when our fire department's called out. So there's a corresponding decrease in expenses to go along with that. And then the category of other revenue was up over the prior year of about $130,000. Most of that was due to one-time donation revenue that came in 18-19. A collection of some late fees and then offset about $40,000 by a decrease in administrative revenue for the successor agency. On the expenditure side, the general fund expenditures were about $431,000 more than the prior year, 17-18. Employee services was pretty flat across the years. But keep in mind, that includes in 18-19 some unplanned staff vacancies, so we were understaffed during that period. Operational expenditures were about the same in the prior year, although the overlying trend is increasing. And you don't necessarily see it here, but in bigger picture, costs are going up. There's a lot of things that we need to be spending on that we have not been able to include in the budget. It just couldn't make it in there, so just to keep those kinds of things in mind as well. Special and purchases and capital outlay, these are things that don't normally go on a trend line. They're hard to compare year to year because they're more specific kind of one-time items often. And when you see them come in under budget, it means either we weren't able to get to it that year, or we've just pushed off the purchase and it will be coming. Occasionally, we found an alternative to purchasing that, but that's more of a rare occasion. Under the heading of special projects for 18-19, we also have the council authorized one-time transfer of $500,000 into the vehicle and equipment replacement fund. If you'll recall, we decided to put that in there. We've been suspending some of the contributions to the larger vehicles, and so this was to kind of help offset some of that deferral. General fund revenues, excluding Measure F-14, were just over $10.9 million for the year. And as a percentage of general fund expenditures, that's about 51%. So in kind of talking about this, it's important to remember that this will cover a lot of different situations for the city. So the council's general minimum policy is 20% of general fund expenditures, but we have evaluation process we go through during each budget cycle that evaluates a number of different criteria that helps to adjust this number: cash flow, state of the economy, the level of diversity in general fund revenues, potential for emergencies or disasters, like when we had the earthquake, the PSPS, all those things kind of come into play. So we evaluate those all. So that's really important to have some amount of healthy reserve to use in those situations. The current seven-year forecast projects the use of reserve funds through the year 23-24, And during that period, we'd hit a low of 28.8% of general fund expenditures. Net pension liability, the city is a part of the California Public Employees Retirement System, or CalPERS, and we offer retirement benefits to the employees. The retirement plans are included in the cost-sharing multi-employer defined benefit pension plan. That's a mouthful. But essentially, our costs are pooled with other cities that are smaller. And we did see a decrease this year in the net pension liability of about $300,000 to $26.5 million. And this was due to a number of factors, but the main one was that the there was an investment gain in the pool larger than it was expected when this was calculated originally. During the 18-19 year, the city paid about $1.7 million toward the accrued liability. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. Just to let the public know, we do have a document, the audited financial statements. You can find this online, I believe, Director?
Yes.
145 pages. So there is a lot in here, including all the notes to the financial statements. The Director just did a cursory review of the general fund. There are internal service funds, enterprise funds. There's a lot in here. So for those of you that really like to dig into those numbers, it is available, and feel free to answer any questions that you, and ask any questions that you might have. And so really what we're looking is at financial statements after the fact. We're looking at what happened last year, and Director, you gave us a very good kind of overview of that general fund. And so really our job here tonight is to, you know, receive and accept the report. When it comes time, I will ask the city clerk, do we need a motion for that, or do just sort of a general thumbs up?
I think on this one it's a review and accept, so a motion would be good.
A motion would be good. Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay. So any questions we might have, most of them have probably been answered, but we may have a few, so I will go ahead and look to the lights to see if we've got any questions of staff. Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
I was waiting to see if anybody else wanted to ask a question. thank you, Jerry. Good report. I refresh my memory, though. You know, as you indicated, our budgeting, excuse me, shows, you know, the use of general fund reserves. But we've been, I should say, you have been, city managers and the department heads have, and all the employees have done a real good job of keeping expenses down. And we budget revenues conservatively, so we typically end up with a little more revenue than expected and our expenses lower. This year, what was our originally anticipated amount that we would use of general fund reserves? Because what you showed in the report is we essentially gained $1 million in the general fund, exclusive of the F-14 road money. But what had we originally projected, do you recall?
Let me look that up really fast.
Okay. While you do that, I just make the point for the public that we budget conservatively and we typically do a little bit better on revenue and we do spend a little less than budgeted in expenditures due to the good work of the staff. And that's important because we are a low revenue city that makes a fraction per capita of what some of the other cities in the county make. And let's see. So that was kind of just a key question because I think you answered for me earlier today most of my questions. And the other thing is on the net pension liability, you mentioned the higher return where CalPERS exceeded their rate of return. That is measured actually, though, for the year 17-18 for purposes of this report, correct?
That is correct, yes.
I mean, we get this whole complicated separate report that's uses a measurement date of 17-18, because I wanted to point out that in the last 3 years that we get this audit and look at it, our net pension liability had gone up $3 million each of the previous 3 years. So for it to go down $300,000 this year is a big deal because it's the first decline that I've seen in quite a while, and I've tracked these issues for a while. So, but it, unfortunately, that's for, you know, a year ago data, and if I'm not mistaken, the returns for this fiscal year or the one ending in June of 19 were not quite as good.
That is true. I think they came in at 6.7, I'm going to say.
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah, I believe it's about 6.7. And in answer to your prior question, I believe it was just about a little over a million in reserves we had originally planned to use for 18-19.
Gotcha. So by ending up a million in the black, we actually came out almost 2 million better than budgeted. Is that a fair statement?
Correct.
Right. Great. Thank you. That's very good news, I think. So thank you for the good report. Thanks to all the staff for good work, financial stewardship.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Yes, if you could come up back to the year-upon-year summary. That our screens have all gone off here. So, no, we're not going to do decimals again. Let's try. We'll try for the... Anyway, while we're looking
for
those numbers, I had noted that the expected amount of reserves we would be using in 21-22 was $1.236 million, and that was significantly higher than the amount projected to use for either the preceding year or the subsequent year or two. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on why that was different.
Okay. I'm sorry, you were referring to year 21-22?
Yes, that's what I wrote down.
So this calculates a lot of different items together. I'm trying to look and remember all of the details that are in here. We do have some scheduled for some things to come online in the future. We kind of project into the future a new hotel or some other things. So we will build those into the schedule, so that might be part of it on the revenue side. The expenditure side.
What that was showing was the number I wrote down, unless I was in error. I think this is the slide, yes. So we've got on the net income or loss slide, we're losing in 2021, projected to lose $1.236 million. As opposed to $450,000 the year before and $441,000 the subsequent year. And I was wondering if there was a particular reason why we were anticipating difficulties in that year.
Is that the general plan? That was done during the budgeting process.
That's what that is. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I answered my own question. But from Finance Committee, there's a big, huge item in one of those years, like $750,000. For the general plan, and we have to show it as an expense, and we're looking for grant money for it, hoping to get that. So if we can get a big chunk for the general plan, that correct? I see nods over there for the city manager.
Yes.
Good, thank you. So that's why we have that variance. Thank you for your patience. I see that. Actually, I'll pass on the rest. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no other questions, I'm going to go ahead and open it up to the public and ask our auditor to come forward. Former auditor myself, I appreciate your hard work.
Yes, my name is Adam Geis, and I was the partner in charge of the audit for the city this year. Just wanted to highlight a few things. When we do our field work, we typically come out to the city twice over the course of the year, once before June 30th year end and once after. The first time we're doing our testing of controls, maybe I'll stand a little bit farther away.
No, keep closer to it is better.
Or closer? Okay.
Yes, thank you.
And we look at how the city runs its payroll, how you take in receipts from all of your various departments and areas, how you write checks. We go through those processes, and what I wanted to point out from our review of all those processes, we didn't really find any major recommendations or deficiencies in those processes this last year, so that was a very positive thing to note. And then, as Jerry noted, we had an unqualified opinion on the financial statements, so our year-end field work, we were able to get all of the support and backup and reasoning that we needed from Jerry and her staff. in order to make the determination that the numbers presented here are accurate. So those are the two big highlights of the year. Jerry did a pretty good job of walking through some of the changes this year, but there were a couple things that I did want to point out. One, you were talking about the net pension liability and how it did go down a little bit from the prior year. We do have a note in the financial statements, note 9. I think that's page 177 of the agenda, where it shows the sensitivity to the discount rate. Mm-hmm. And I like to point that out because the net pension liability is looking at the city's future payments over a long period of time, and there's a large reliance on CalPERS' expected return on investments. So, you know, 1% change in those expected return or change in the discount rate, you know, if the discount rate was lowered by 1%, it would result in the net pension liability increasing by about $13 million. So, you know, there's a question of whether or not their current 7% annual rate of return is reasonable to be recognized every year. So just something, you know, to point out. On the other hand, that net pension liability is more of a concept of what the city's costs are going to be in the future, but is not the actual payments that are made on the plan. The actual payments were on page 98 of the report. And I just wanted to point out that page because it's a good page to look at to see exactly how much the city paid to PERS over the last 5 years since the new GASB went into effect. So starting with the year ended June 30, 2015, the city paid $2.2 million to CalPERS, whereas this year the city paid almost $3 million to CalPERS. So that is a cost that does continue to rise. You know, over the long period of time, that may decrease as more and more employees are on the newer PEPRA plans, but as you know, something to keep an eye on. One other item in here that's a little bit unusual was the last note in the notes section on page 71 of the financial statements. And that was about a prior period adjustment. And I just wanted to point out here, what happens with the redevelopment agency with the tax increment that the city receives is typically you receive the money for the next 6 months in advance. So in the past, that money had just been reported as revenue when it was received. But with this prior period adjustment, we're shifting that revenue to report it to match up with when the expenses are actually incurred. So while the prior period adjustment was $925,000, that's offset by deferring the revenue in the current fiscal year. So the actual change in revenue during the year from those two adjustments was, I think, about $30,000 in total. So it's not like, you know, a huge $900,000 change. Other than that, I just wanted to say thank you to the staff to getting us everything that we needed and helping it go through a smooth process, and then ask you guys if you have any questions for me.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of our auditor? Councilmember Fonzi.
I've heard you and then Jerry also mention this unqualified opinion, which is an odd way of putting it. Can you explain this in layman's terms, what this means?
It means that basically we were able
Thumbs
to... We were able to properly do our job, meaning we were able to look at all of the city's finances, all of the final numbers, and that we did our testing and determined that those were accurate numbers.
In other words, we're doing just fine.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's accurate without qualification.
Yes, that's exactly it. All right. Did you have a...
Well, I did.
A necessary question?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm wondering if you're going to stay here afterwards, because I had some questions and or comments on what you stated about net pension liability.
Because he's also a pension nerd.
Yeah. So
geek's the right word, yeah.
I don't know if you want to sit through what should be brief, our successor agency meeting, but because you made the comment on page 60 that a 1% difference in rate of return would result in a $13 million increase in our net pension liability. And I did note that that particular parameter actually increased this year, while the middle parameter, the current 7% return rate, decreased, as we noted. And I was going to ask you why it increased. But I'll be happy to do that afterwards if you want to hang around for about 15 minutes as we go through the... And I had some other questions regarding how in the what I'll call the Bartel report, because we have to pay a professional a little bit to analyze the net pension liability, and they reflect a pension expense of $4.7 million, which is obviously calculated differently than the $2 million that you pointed out on page 98.
Adam, right. If you're willing to stay a few minutes, it won't be long. Chew your hair off, but you can bill Charles for that.
Yeah. It's part of your appearance tonight.
Thank
you.
You're
very smart to show up late. That was great.
Yes,
that was very smart.
Because you've always had to sit through this, and I said that earlier when you weren't here. I was glad that you didn't have to sit through the first few hours. So thank you very much. Any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back. And I did just want to note that we do have our city treasurer, former auditor-controller, county auditor-controller, CPA here, and just see, Jerry, if you had anything that you wanted to add. With a microphone.
Only is that this pension thing is, as you know, a concern of practically every government agency in the country, not to mention in California. So don't be too alarmed. This year, the stock market being so crazy on the upside, that will help. So it takes CalPERS about a year and a half for it all to filter down to your side, to your end. But so that's the good news. And you are chipping away at it, as Ms. Rangel pointed out. You're following, you're making your required payments. You're not trying to go through some way of skipping payments or anything like that. So that's to your credit for the city.
Thank you. With that, I'll ask if there's a motion.
I'll move that the council review and accept the financial audit for the period ending in June 30th, 2019.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Fonzi, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And now is the time for council announcements and committee reports. And so the announcements are if we've been involved in anything in the community that we want to let you know about, or our committee reports, the various committees that we sit on, and anything that we think our colleagues here on council or you in the public need to know. So I'll start with my right to my left. Kim?
The Homeless Services Oversight Council meets tomorrow afternoon at the Family Services Network from 1 to Greenslow. And I did also note that on KSBY that our warming center here in Atascadero ran a segment, and they are still looking for volunteers. As you know, the weather has been pretty cold and also wet, and so they've been open quite a lot. And it's very easy to sign up as a chaperone or to sign up to on a online to bring a meal, and they have a couple of people each night for slots for people to bring meals. And it's a great way for the public to help.
Thank you.
Very good. We have a design review meeting tomorrow. We'll be considering a 4-unit development on Tunitas. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you. SLOCOG and RTA, not a lot going on. What is interesting is at the national level, they're recognizing broadband as an element of transportation. So I'm interested to see, what opportunities might arise from that. I think because they realize that to have that connectivity so that you're reducing VMT, that people can work where they live and that type of thing. So that'll be interesting. I think I mentioned the VMT banking last time. Did I bring that up? I'm trying to remember how many meetings I've had since we met. The county is asked SLOCOG to adopt something called Vehicle Miles Traveled VMT Banking. And so we're looking at putting that into our overall work plan, but really there's no information on how that works because we as a municipality would need to actually apply that, or any municipality would. That VMT banking would be, say, a development wants to come in and they could not meet the standards for Caltrans for VMT because it's changing to VMT versus level of service, and then they would pay in an impact fee to offset that. So think of it like cap and trade, carbon credits. But really, what would be the mechanism to do that? SLOCOG doesn't have the ability to require municipalities to do that. So just interesting that that's on the work plan. I don't know how that will play out. Thought you would all want to know about that. Still working, the EVC, Economic Vitality Committee, we sort of have a small North County working group that's growing and really looking at how do we support the North County as a region, how do we play off of each other's assets and strengths and support one another. So still fleshing out how that looks, and I'll keep you posted on that. I did want to say, Kelsey Sullivan, you'll remember last year, moved her preschool, the Learning Tree, over to where the Masons building, bought that building, and she was nominated by the County Office of Education and the First Five Initiative for the February Hands-On Heroes Award. So that was really exciting, and she asked me and a handful of other people to come, and they interviewed us, and they're doing a whole kind of spread on her, and so really recognizing her efforts and the education that she does with the kids, and I got to be there for a little bit of a sing-along, and it was really quite a treat. So good job, Kelsey.
Thank you. Two things. One, IWMA, the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I am now going to be a member of the executive committee because, you know, it's a rather large body at 13 members. So there's a three-member executive committee to try to help set the agendas and, shepherd things along a little bit. So that will begin and constitute another meeting, an extra meeting beginning in February. And also, I am... and now on the Revenue and Taxation Committee or Subcommittee for the League of Cities. And so I'll be attending my first meeting regarding that in Sacramento next week.
Okay. And Councilmember Newsom, I'd also love to hear about the FRACE event, if you'd be willing to tell us about your participation. I think both you and Phil did that.
We did. I didn't even know you were there, Phil. So I'll talk about my committee's meetings. We have a design review committee that fellow council member Fonzie spoke of. We also have a city schools meeting on Friday at 9 o'clock. As for our entertainment on the weekends, at what time in the morning did you get there, Phil?
Yeah, it was about 8:30, I think, in the morning. Actually, we were at 9.
Yeah, we participated in the 2020 Running Chicken race. It was their second annual 10K fun run walk. It recognized the FRACE girls that had passed a few years back, and there was 420 participants. It was 50-something degrees when we ran around Santa Margarita Lake.
Felt a lot colder than that.
I was so sweating so bad at the end I didn't recognize it. But the finale finishing line was an uphill battle. So everybody got some great photo ops of that. But it was so great to see the community come together, embrace the girls' vision of living life to the fullest. Their motto is find your happy pace. And all of the kids that came around from college to support this family. So we came together as a community, and instead of being a sad and emotional day, it was a fun-filled day. So I was excited to be a part of it, and I'm glad that all of us were able to do that. So, great event.
And they raise money for something they're doing within the community. Remind us.
The foundation that they've created is raising funds for scholarships. It's also giving athletic shoes to kids who can't afford it. They're doing so much for community in the benefit of their children that they've lost. So they're giving back so much more. So it's a great organization. If anybody needs any more information, you can email me directly, and I can get you a link. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that, and thank both you and Director Dunsmore for representing the city so well. Appreciate that. Do we have any individual determinations? No? All right. We will adjourn our city council meeting to the successor agency. And I will call that meeting to order. My papers are, here we go. Oh, that's a public financing authority. Wait a minute. We've got the other one here somewhere. Here we go. I will call to order the successor agency meeting, the successor agency to the Community Redevelopment Association of Atascadero. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Here.
Councilmember Funk.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Also move.
I'll second.
Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're on to the consent calendar. Do I have a motion to approve the anybody wishing to pull an item from the consent calendar? Anyone in the public? No. Motion to approve the consent calendar.
So also move. Second.
I think I had a motion by Councilmember Fonzi, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now we are on to community forum. This is a portion of the meeting where any member of the public wishing to speak to this body on something that is not on the agenda tonight but over which we have jurisdiction be limited to 3 minutes. Please come forward if there is anyone. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the council. And we have no public hearings. We have one management report, and that will be our administrative services director, Jerry Rangel, for our recognized obligation payment schedule.
Thank you again. As you said, this is the recognized obligation payment schedule for the period July 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2021. It will go before the countywide oversight board on their meeting the end of January. I believe it's the 27th, and it is due into the county tomorrow on the 15th. And then the ROPS eventually will be due to the Department of Finance after that on February 1st. This ROPS, the 2021, will be cover 1 year of obligation, and it does include an administrative budget. The requested redevelopment property tax trust fund amount is just over $1,863,751. This is for bond debt service. Some amount is for the administrative allowance to compensate the city's general fund, essentially, for the staff time and other costs that are used for that. And then bond compliance. So every so often, through 5 years, we have to do some calculation on the arbitrage, so that would go toward that amount. As I said, if the successor agency board passes this, this will go to the oversight board, and then it, once, assuming it passes there, would go to the Department of Finance, and then they have until April to notify us. And then, as Mr. Geis was saying, this money would come into the agency in June prior to the July 1st period. And that concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I'll look to the lights. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, I will go to the public. Do we have any public comment in this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the agency. I don't call us council here, do I? To the board? Back to the board?
You are sort of council.
You're in council? Okay. Yeah. Bring it back to the council for a motion.
I will move that we adopt successor agency draft resolution of the ROPS for the period indicated.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonzi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Let's see. Any board announcements and reports? Seeing none, we will adjourn to the meeting of the Public Financing Authority. So I call this meeting of the Public Financing Authority to order. Roll call, please.
Board Member Fonzie.
Present.
Board Member Funk.
Present.
Board Member Newsom.
Present.
Vice Chair Borbo.
Yeah, present, here.
Chair Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Do I have an approval of the agenda? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
A motion by Board Member Fonzie, second by Vice Chair Borbo. Roll call, please.
Sorry, this is very hard. Board Member Fonzie.
Yes.
Board Member Funk.
Yes.
Board Member Newsom.
Yes.
Vice Chair Borbo.
Yes.
Chair Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now on to community forum. This is for anyone wishing to speak to the authority on anything we have jurisdiction over, but which is not on our agenda tonight. We're limited to 3 minutes. Anybody wishing to speak? Seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back to the authority.
The board.
The board. let's see. Are there any board announcements or reports?
Nope.
Seeing none. We are on to the consent calendar, which is just one item, our draft action minutes of January 22, 2019. Do I have a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Oh, actually, and is there anybody in the public wishing to pull an item? Or anybody? Nope, nobody pulling. We're good. We have a motion by, was it Vice Chair Borbo, and a second by Board Member Newsom. Roll call, please.
Board Member Newsom.
Yes.
Board Member Fonzie.
Yes.
Board Member Funk.
Yes.
Vice Chair Borbo.
Yes.
Chair Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We only do this once a year, so you can tell we're a little rusty at it. But anyway, good night all. Adjourned.